Hey, let's start the show.
It's April 12, 2012. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith. We're broadcasting live out of my lovely living room in Pacifica, California right now. Norman Chan's here.
Yeah, I am. It's really early.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be one of those days where the sunlight comes in and out.
I don't think we're going to see sun
and out
in Pacifica today. It looks like heavy fog, and I don't think we're going to get below the fog layer today.
Oh.
Gary, how you doing? You're here today. You're looking purple.
Thank you. I just want to say, I think we've come to a point now where we take it for granted, but we really do have very good theme music.
Yeah, Waffle Stomp.
Yes.
What I've noticed is we always find ourselves kind of like bopping around to it when it plays at the top of the show.
Did I ever tell you the origin of the music? Because he said, hey, what do you want this to sound like?
Yeah, the NPR thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Make it sound like NPR, but then make it kind of metal at the end.
Is that how you see yourself? Like a metal version?
No, not at all. I just thought it was funny.
I don't hear NPR on that.
Yeah, the chimes at the beginning. See, it does the, hold on.
Yeah, listen.
That's NPR.
I guess that is.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, and then it
kicks in.
It drops the heavy drop.
Right. Shit considered.
Yeah.
That is how Will looks. Like, Will sees himself as like a combination of like Ira Glass.
I know. No.
I don't think Will. Will sees himself as a Robert Siegel.
Yeah, okay. Robert Siegel.
Robert Siegel. That's all things considered.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't
He's
like all
things. He's a deep voice guy.
Do I have a deep voice?
You imagine as you're like your college professor.
My voice sounds high in my head.
Michelle Norris.
Oh, that's even worse. This is going dark places.
But I get what you were going for, and I think you succeeded. I'm just saying it's catchy. Like I always find myself kind of moving around.
It's a good song.
Yeah.
The one thing I wish we did have was more. We need to do some more interstitial music, so we have some stuff to cut in between. It's not just the same keys thing.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's April 12th, 2012. That's a hard thing to say. It turns out I realized that about halfway through.
Yeah.
Does it feel like April already?
Not with this weather.
Well, I mean, it's always rainy in April here.
What a weird year.
Yeah. It's been busy. I think we should just jump right into the news. We're recording early because you have to go to L.A.
I got it. Literally, once this is done, my bag is packed. I'm getting in the car and driving to L.A. immediately after this. So I appreciate you recording early to accommodate.
So you're saying your bag is packed and you're ready to go?
Yeah,
leaving out for one more show,
but I'm not leaving on a jet plane.
Oh well, that's your mistake.
Is that the song you were doing, or
that's where I was going for? Yeah. I couldn't remember this. I couldn't remember the second line though. Bags are packed and ready to go for one more show. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
People in chat are probably screaming.
Embarrassing ourselves now.
Yeah, this is bad. So let's just jump right into the news. There's a bunch of stuff cooking this week. First off. This is a podcast that's not for children. If you have your kids in the car and you don't like them to hear naughty language, then you should not listen to this podcast.
Take them out of the car.
By way of demonstration, fuck.
It's good. Way to give them a little bit of buffer to turn off the... So fumbling,
just in case fumbling, you think we were bluffing.
Fumbling for the phone, and all of a sudden, boom. Well done, Gary. Well done.
That warning is... We back that warning up.
Way to roll into that. We have the explicit tag on here for a reason. Instagram... Speaking of some fucking crazy news, Instagram got sold to Facebook.
$1 billion!
Wow, so it was just last week that we were talking.
How ironic.
Wondering.
We were just saying, how the hell do they ever make money?
How
and Instagram was like, well,
money?
Here's how, motherfuckers.
Yeah,
about $1 billion.
Hold on. That's not about making money.
It's not
a sustainable way to make money. They can't sell it to Facebook every year.
How
often do you need to repeat a billion-dollar sale in order to be sustainable?
Okay, well, I'm going to give you the option of making... $200,000 a year.
Okay.
As a business.
That sounds like a good deal.
Or $1 billion.
I'll take the billion, champ.
Yeah. You know how you see these TV commercials now where you can go online and like type in the number that you're going to need to retire?
I've never seen
I guarantee
that
you it's less than $1 billion.
Well,
unless you have a very extravagant lifestyle.
That the super lotto, the super lotto from 2 weeks ago wasn't even that
much money.
That was
half $1 billion.
Yeah, and that was split between like six people.
Oh, those poor bastards.
Do you think that was over the top?
A lot of people were talking about tech bubbles and return to 2000, 2001, you know, because we've done this before. There was a time in the late 90s when the internet was really hot and people were spending ridiculous amounts of money on launching new properties and buying things.
Oh, there was a new startup every week.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And out of that came pretty much Amazon. and that's it. Right. Right? Amazon is the one survivor of that whole time.
So we're back in the time now where investors they want to pick up the next Dropbox, the next Facebook. They want to get in early. Instagram had been taking investment for a long time. And the curious thing about the Facebook acquisition was they actually closed another round of investment right before the acquisition, which Facebook must have known about to make that acquisition. And the valuation for that was $500 million.
Okay.
It was a $50 million investment at a valuation of $500 million.
So that means they bought 10% of the company in exchange for $50 million.
Some other investors. Who immediately, because they valued Instagram at $500 million and then Facebook bought them for $1 billion.
Doubled their money
in an instant. And
I understand that it's a great deal for Instagram. I'm just trying to figure out, how is it worth $1 billion to Facebook?
Because Facebook is really scared. So Facebook is a photo sharing site primarily now. I think 270 million.
You think
million,
that's primarily what it's for?
More photos are uploaded there than anywhere else on the web.
There goes the sun. Yeah. 270 million photos uploaded every day. But the people upload photos there, they're slowly moving it over to Instagram as a way of sharing photos. Because if Instagram, unlike Flickr, isn't just a place for you to upload your photos and store them, it's the sharing aspect, and that's what Facebook wants.
Now, but I don't want to sound evil here. But why not? If I was Zuckerberg, why not simply clone it? Why not just add filters to Facebook's in-app camera why not just copy it?
They don't care about the filters. They care that Instagram has an app that people like and use, and no one really likes Facebook's app. They use it because they have to, because they're addicted to Facebook, but they don't use the Facebook app the way people use Instagram's app.
It's much easier to buy an app that people are already engaged in than to try to build it themselves.
Facebook has tried cloning other services before, and the one thing they've really failed at is location. So remember Facebook Places with the logo that was like Foursquare? It was like a four and written in grass. They've tried location stuff, and they closed that actually quietly. And
You can still check into Places though, or is it?
You can still check into Places, but it's not the whole Groupon thing.
You mean the deals, pre-sold coupons?
Instagram, people actually leave that turned on by default. When you check your Instagram feed, people actually are, for some reason, they like sharing where they are. It's almost like the path, you know, checking in.
Right.
And that's something that Facebook has never got a good grasp of. So whether or not it's worth $1 billion, I mean, Facebook has the money.
How much is that per filter? It's like $100 million per filter.
Somebody came
up
with an interesting statistic that said you could pay $1 for every photograph that's ever been put on Instagram, and you still wouldn't be close to $1 billion.
Yeah, but I mean, I think they're looking at the future.
A picture is worth $1,000 million.
What's really interesting when you look at the way that people view services and how brands are liked and disliked. Facebook is a brand that, though very heavily used, also seems to be largely disliked in the public consciousness because of privacy issues and just some of the things that they've done. And so you say, well, they want to buy Instagram because it's something that's liked. But what we saw in the immediate kind of knee-jerk reaction is that if Facebook buys it, doesn't it then become disliked because it becomes part of Facebook?
Well, I think they're going to remain independent, right? It's going to be integrated with Facebook.
But people seem very, very cynical about where it's all going
to
go.
So they said you'd still be able to post to other services and you'd still have a separate login. You wouldn't have to use your Facebook login to log into Instagram and all that stuff.
I think for people who use Instagram and don't use Facebook, they're never going to have to see the Facebook side of it. So they're not going to get more Facebook in Instagram.
But it seems there's going to be some increased level of integration.
So it's going to be the other way around. So for people who use Facebook are going to get pushed to Instagram as a way of using that service. And they'll get more, you know, your friends are using Instagram. Right. Your friends are sharing pictures.
So it's not like the Draw Something acquisition last week, where Zynga bought Draw Something to get 200 million users into their service.
Facebook
is buying Instagram to get 250 million people onto Instagram.
Not the 35 million people on Instagram onto Facebook, because that's
they're not buying
peanuts.
Users. They are buying it for the services they built.
It did illustrate a thing that I think is a little bit depressing to me these days, which is again the kind of the immediate knee jerk cynical reaction to everything that Facebook does. And I don't think Facebook's a perfect company. They've clearly made some mistakes in the past with privacy, and they don't always come across as the most user friendly company. But when they buy Instagram and everyone just immediately shits the bed and like, oh my God, this is the worst thing ever. And they don't even see what's going to happen yet. Like, it kind of bums me out that the default reaction is negative every time.
But it's not just because it's Facebook. It's because a small independent company who has many prospects has less incentive now to innovate because they've made it. And congrats to those guys who made it. Those 20 people who work at Instagram.
Yeah,
right. No, they're all cashing out. I mean, I think the owner, the two guys who founded it, and one of the guys is cashing out. He's making half of it, $500 million just
for
him because he has 50% share. And the rest of employees, I think the lower level employees are splitting $100 million or something, which is still
the other
great.
Thing that bums me out. I think there's a certain amount of resentment and bitterness. People going like, $1 billion? It's a bunch of stupid filters. Well, you know what? You didn't think of
it. Exactly.
Someone else did.
But the thing about Instagram isn't the filters. This is what we've said all along, and people don't get this. The Hipstamatic people that you thought were probably hanging themselves in their closet last week.
Yeah.
Facebook didn't buy Instagram because of the filters. Facebook bought Instagram because they've gotten the social sharing right. And they're one of the only places that Flickr has been doing social sharing of photos for 10 years. And they don't have the installed base and the number of users
that
Instagram does.
It's worrisome because Instagram's success is from having a business model of having no business model, like Twitter. Lots of investment. It's a service that people like and use, but they have no way of making money. And just because they are bought out because a bigger company with ways of making money that people may or may not like, advertising, wants that.
And this is the thing, as much as it's easy to romanticize the narrative of like the little scrappy upstart indie developer that's been gobbled up by the big evil corporation Facebook, don't you think that for the Instagram founders this was the end game all
along? Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that's what's
sad about. This is what startups do, right? You innovate, you get it out there, you get some momentum, and you cash out. That's what everybody
does.
That's
bad business. It's bad business because
not for the guy that just made $500 million.
That's true. It's bad, but it's bad for
I wish I had
business overall.
Yeah.
What would you do with $500 million, Will?
You know what I would do? I would hire Jesse Eisenberg to read every Zuckerberg post that he posts on the Facebook blog.
Was that movie that the kid had to spend like $1 million?
Brewster's Millions?
Yes, yeah.
Well, is that Brewster's Millions?
Millions, yeah.
Yeah,
where Richard Pryor had to set.
Well, that was a remake.
Oh. Yeah. Really?
Yeah. You could not spend $1 million a day if you wanted to.
Oh, I could spend $1 million a day. There's a Lambo dealership in San Francisco.
But you can't have anything to show for it
at the end.
Yeah. Oh, right. You have to just piss it away. And you can't just give it to people, right?
Yeah.
You can't give it away. Yeah. And
even if it's something you could keep, I don't think, and it's a thought experiment, I don't think you could spend $1 million a day if you had to buy different things and you could only spend it $1 million a day. So you can't like say, oh, I'm going to spend $500 million in one day. If you had to spend $1 million every day, you couldn't do it. There's no way. You can't say, I'm going to buy a house.
Well, not if you're allowed to not have anything
at that point, you have to buy experiences, not items, not
But you couldn't spend
things.
It. You couldn't spend
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you could. You could hire like Steven Spielberg to come teach you how to shoot a –
The logistics
give you a
work.
Directing
that
class.
That would take scheduling, right?
You could do what those like Arab sheiks do and have like Beyonce come and sing at your kid's birthday
party.
Yeah,
exactly. I would have Jay-Z come wake me up every morning. Hey, good morning.
Why would you want Jay-Z?
Pick somebody random. You said Beyonce. Jay-Z was the first person I thought.
I would not want Jay-Z.
I think there's a very telling difference there.
I think that would be very interesting. I think
I'd pay Beyonce to wake me up every morning.
Good morning, Will.
I can think of like at least 50 people that would be ahead of Jay-Z.
Probably
none of them are dudes.
Probably a good point.
Good job.
So anyway,
see, this is why people listen to the Tested podcast. You're not going to get this kind of analysis of the Instagram buyout anywhere else.
No.
It turns into how Will would pay Jay-Z to wake him up in the morning.
I want directing lessons from Steven Spielberg and Michael Bay together.
Oh,
I would get James Cameron and Michael Bay and Steven Spielberg all in one room and have them teach me how to make a movie.
This is like a time
travel
thought
experiment. You wouldn't rather have like Martin Scorsese or something?
No, I would get people who would have massive conflict.
So you just want to see them fight?
I want to see.
I don't think
director fights.
I don't think Michael Bay for $500,000 would spend a day teaching you.
You'd have to
shoot
movies. You'd have to offer.
What if I gave him like a 5-day contract where he got $10 million?
See this is the problem.
$5 million at the end. I don't know.
In my,
you say I can only spend $1 million.
You can only spend $1 million a day. You have to use it in that day. The money has to be out of your pocket.
What if
or services have to be redeemed that day?
What if instead of $500,000 cash for the director, it's an honorarium to some charity? Because then if
charity, none of this charity.
So
the whole point of being a billionaire, you could buy 10 cars, right? But then you spend half a day signing the
meals,
leases,
right? I would eat some endangered animals probably.
Yeah.
See if I can get a panda bear steaks or something like that.
A new way of looking at Panda Express.
Yeah, exactly. all the poor pandas. Let's talk about
news. Anyway, I just want to say I don't quite get especially when you look at the numbers, I don't get the Instagram thing yet. I do think that these things tend to get inflated by the fact that they're in the zeitgeist. They seem like the next thing. Facebook's like, and I think Facebook maybe is just kind of just shielding itself. It's like, we don't necessarily know if this is worth $1 billion, but it's safer to buy it than have it emerge into something a year from now
Afraid. Yeah. They're afraid they see the rise in popularity at this rate. It's phenomenal growth rate because we're talking about
massive spike when the Android version came out.
They had 30 million users before, just in iOS. And then Android, there are technically more people using Android than iPhone in the world.
Yeah.
2 million immediately in a day and a half.
Yeah.
So at that rate, you could see it getting the 100 million users, really actively engaged users. I don't know people, like, when you use a Facebook app, you don't care. But when you use Instagram app, you care about that app, at least from the people I know who use it.
I do.
Yeah, you care about like your framing of the picture, you know, the filters, the fact that people get, you know, we're up in arms about the filters. That's passion about the app.
I'm much more careful with my friends list on Instagram than probably anything else other than Path. Like with who I keep on friends list and who's not on my friends list.
That type of engagement that, you know, you can't just measure numerically.
And I think the filters, even though the filters are very polarizing, people, you know, some people love them, some people hate them. I do think it is a big part of it. I don't think it would be where it is today if it didn't have that feature.
Well, that was the hook that got them launched. That was the hook that made them beat Hipstamatic. Was that the they had filters and they were free. And that, oh, by the way, it's also sharing your photos with everybody else.
And also, I think Hipstamatic ended up overcomplicating it with like the combination of film and lenses. Like it became too.
Flip on the lenses.
Yeah, and the skeuomorphism of it I didn't like either. I like that theory that someone put out this week. The reason why it sold so much is that Zuckerberg simply doesn't comprehend figures smaller now than $1 billion. It's like, well, how much should we pay for it? Well, I mean, $1 billion, right? Isn't that the smallest amount of money that there is?
He's like, let's get rid of everything less than a billion dollar note.
Wouldn't it be great if he sat down with the Instagram founders and said, you know what's cool? $1 billion.
Well, no, I bet that's what the Instagram founder said.
Do you think Zuckerberg's watched the movie? He has to.
He has. He's acknowledged.
Oh, he did.
What was his reaction?
It must be weird.
There was an official statement about it. It must be so weird to
see your life dramatized.
Oh, it would be
like
awful.
And also to know, because even though The Social Network, I think, is a phenomenal film, it's not 100% accurate. There's no true life story that dramatizes. And I think it is kind of way off in many ways.
But just to hear the character that's portraying you reading Sorkin dialogue instead of the dumb shit that you normally say.
I would like, hey, if somebody, like, hey, you're going to look like kind of a dick, but all your dialogue's going to be written by Aaron Sorkin, I would take that deal.
You know what I would do? That's $1 million right there. Hey, Aaron Sorkin, write your dialogue every day? Yeah.
He would just follow you around, and anytime someone says something to you, you just like whispering to you.
Or you give him your earpiece, right? You just have the earpiece in. He's like,
It would be like your life.
It's very good.
I like that.
That's a good way of spending money.
I would do that every day. Anytime I had something important, I would hire Sorkin.
So in terms of overvaluing companies, there was a good post by one of the angel investors this week about, you know, like Y Combinator, which is like a startup incubator, teaches entrepreneurs how to create startups. And investors now are way oversubscribing to these initial these initial investments.
Way too much money.
Putting way too much money in. And
we need more coffee too, Gary.
Yeah, but since you only have sugar and I can't drink sugar.
Right. Okay. Don't pour the soda in the coffee.
I'm getting my caffeine from
I definitely think there is a bubble. I think investors have too much money and are putting too much money in these companies without formal business plans.
Well, which is how we got in the problem in the first time. Yeah. You know, when you could buy dog food on the internet, which, by the way, you can buy dog food from Amazon again. So we're back to dog food on the internet. But
in all seriousness, if you suddenly, let's say you won that Powerball Mega Millions or whatever, and let's say you did have $500 million today, just sitting in the bank account, tax free, it's all yours. Do you think you would continue to work?
I would do exactly the same thing I do every day.
You would become a man of leisure.
I would buy a new car, I'd buy a new house, and I'd take better vacation.
You would still go to work every day.
That's a $10 million payout.
No way, dude.
If you had a $500 million payout.
Yeah.
First of all, you don't tell anyone.
No.
You never tell anyone.
Well, no, because you know why? Because all the fucking people come out of the woodwork.
Yeah. Yeah. All those horror stories, people who have won the Powerball.
They always take
the anonymity.
They either lose it all in like 2 years because their life changes
Well, when you win that amount of money, you know, they put you with a counselor. Who tries to listen out now?
A wealth counselor?
Seriously. I mean, it sounds like the best thing can happen to me, but it can fuck up your life. It's happened so many times.
It's a psychological thing.
Hey, it's okay to be this wealthy.
And
what's going to happen is all your friends,
yes,
will turn against you because they feel like you're not being generous enough with them.
And your family.
Oh, yeah.
And if you even start the path of charity,
yeah,
and your intent is just to dabble in it a little bit, you can't. They will come back.
This seems like the kind of rationalization somebody who's won $500,000 or a few million dollars.
$500 million.
How much did you win in the lottery?
Is a lot of
money. I like to think that I would be that person. If you've got that amount of money, I like to think I'd be like the Vinny Chase. Like, you want everyone's life around you to be enriched as well. Like, you want all your friends and all your family to benefit as well, right?
No, not really.
No, not you.
I'd just quietly sit on my money and die incredibly wealthy. Have my remains
like Daniel Day-Lewis in There Will Be Blood.
Yeah, exactly.
You want all
I
in
drink
ones.
Your milkshake.
You want in ones, right?
Yeah,
$500 million in which actually would not. I mean, it would just fill. I think it would fill like this room full of money.
No. We did the dump truck calculation once. Remember?
Or maybe not in ones.
$500 million in ones is a lot. Of
dump ones
trucks.
Is a lot, but
yeah, in hundreds, it's a 1/100th the amount.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would continue. The thing is, for me, it's like kind of a different thing. Like, I would continue to work because I'm fortunate enough to already do what I love. But I could actually like finance my own shit. Like, right, I could make my own.
Oh,
movie.
That's what you do. You just start a production company.
That seems like
a
good way to turn $500 million into like $100 million, though. If you're not good at it.
Yeah, you'd burn through it real fast.
Yeah, because $500 million doesn't go that far in Hollywood these
days. Well, not if you're making those kind of movies.
Yeah, you make Avatar 3.
You get two chances. You get two chances. Just enough money to start.
No, because you won't come out of the bank with like a $200 million movie right away.
Start out with some low budget stuff like The Crying Game. Do a Miramax. Miramax
also,
from the 90s.
No one funds movies entirely. No single private. I mean, there are billionaires who start production companies, but they still get other investors.
Well, Mel Gibson did it, and he made a ton of money doing it.
George
Lucas
does
it.
Yeah, well, George Lucas can do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I watched
Hugo. That's the greatest thing is I've said this before that I think having wealth is the greatest thing about it, I would imagine, is not being able to buy all this crazy shit, but just never having to worry about money. Yeah. And I think when you're super, super wealthy, it's the idea, it's the freedom that comes from never having to bow to anyone or answer to anyone or like, go cap in hand to anyone. You just can do whatever you want.
But don't you think it would be like if the stock market takes a dive and you get the note from your money guy and he says, hey, you lost $200 million yesterday. Wouldn't that freak you out? Wouldn't that be a whole different level of worrying about money? This is a problem I'd like to have.
Well, what I've discovered, and I don't have anything like this level of wealth, but I have had conversations with and know people who are extraordinarily wealthy, like multi-millionaires. And the degree to which you worry about money does not diminish at all. As much as I've said, I think the great thing about being super rich is you don't have to worry about money. In fact, in my experience from people that I know that are super rich, they worry about money just as much.
Well, it seems like the people who
they have more to lose.
Because in their minds, it can all evaporate tomorrow in the stock market or whether you just don't know.
Well, and so then it seems like the way you can not worry about
really
money
big carpet
is is to be somebody like Brad Pitt or Tom Cruise that has basically unending earning potential. So that even if he loses all of his money,
I think
Brad Pitt can go out and make three movies and be back on
it's
easy.
It's easier to make $100 million than it is to be Brad Pitt.
Well, obviously, yes. Thelma and Louise was a good movie. Let's talk about the next thing on the list, which I've scrolled down. Hey, cell phone theft. Have either of you ever had a phone stolen?
Stolen, no.
Lost?
No, I'm pretty good about that.
Gary?
No, I've been very fortunate also.
I've never even had to use the Find My iPhone feature on the phone.
I've used it many times, but only when I've lost it somewhere around the house.
Yeah, it's like in between the cushions of the
useful?
Sofa.
What's that?
In that
it makes a
resolution?
Horrible noise.
It makes like a submarine noise, radar ping. Yeah, okay.
Really loud.
You get it.
Yeah. So right now in lots of countries when your phone is stolen, you report a phone stolen, then the carriers all blacklist it. So it will no longer be usable on those networks.
Right.
Right. So like Australia is one of those places. So you lose your phone in Australia,
So the phone the handset has like a unique
they
ID.
Blacklist the IMEI whatever the unique ID number is.
Right.
We don't do that.
It's bricked, basically.
Yeah, it's valueless.
Could I, if it's an iPhone and they do that, could I still use it as like an iPod Touch?
Probably. I won't be able to connect to the network.
Right.
The upshot, though, is that its resale value is dramatically diminished to the point that people don't bother stealing phones anymore.
No, some people are stupid and they buy stolen phones without checking whether it actually works. And so as long as there are stupid people out there who do that, then people will still keep on
stealing
phones.
But the point is, in Australia, the phone theft rate dropped dramatically when they implemented
it. All right, so what is it that's going on now?
So in the U.S., we don't have that policy. Right now, I think Verizon and Sprint blacklist stolen phones reported as stolen, but AT&T and T-Mobile don't. That's changing, apparently. The carriers are banding together to fight cell phone theft, and they're going to have a list of all the stolen cell phones now.
All right. Well, I mean, that seems like a positive move.
It's unclear whether they're going to blacklist them, but at least they'll have a list. So the list is a good thing, I guess.
All right.
Okay. That's good. You know, AT&T also did something recently or caved to pressure and do something beneficial to the consumers. You can actually unlock your phone off AT&T.
How did you try that?
I'm in the process of doing it right now. So if you have, for example, an iPhone that you bought on contract, you know, a year and a half ago or a year ago, that is not tied to your contract now. So you had
an iPhone 4 and you replaced it with an iPhone 4S.
Which we all did.
Okay.
We all are technically such still dumbasses on contract with our networks.
Yeah.
But we have phones now that are no longer associated with that account. Right now, the only way, before this week, the only way to get that onto another network, it's not technically wasn't unlocked. So in order to get it to T-Mobile or use it overseas, you had to jailbreak your phone, which with the new iOS versions are increasingly difficult.
Yeah.
So AT&T has caved and will now let you unlock your phone if that phone is not tied to contract.
Is there a fee or anything associated with
it? No
that?
Fee.
Okay.
Oh, really?
No fee. And the process is relatively simple. If you go to log into your AT&T, I guess it's AT&T right now only, AT&T's website, you can even do the computer chat, or I guess it's some dude in some
other place.
You know, housewife
robo
in middle America.
Robo person?
I think it's a real person.
Make thousands of dollars a month from home.
Yeah. You have to give them
every single time I go into one of those like live, you know, the online chat service technician people. There's a little mini Turing test that's going on in my head every time.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah. I don't know for sure.
And you're always tempted.
Do you ever
put
fuck
in
with them?
Something crazy?
Because they have to adhere to such a script.
Yeah,
I don't think that's against company policy. Well,
I do. I've always wanted to just like get like 90s AOL chat room.
But you know
ASL.
No. You know when you log in, it's tied to whatever account. You can't do it anonymously. So.
Hey, can I borrow your AT&T login, Norm?
No, you cannot
Norm?
Borrow my AT&T login. These are real people with real jobs.
I just want to pay your bills.
I don't want
to. I'm here to help. Perhaps I won $500 million last week.
The thing I wonder is how many conversations they're having at once.
Oh, yeah.
They got to be fielding like, you know, at least 10 different windows. That's why it takes so long for
them. Yeah, it takes them ages to get back to you sometimes.
You see like, person is typing, right?
Well, so I had that experience with EA a few months ago because I've been trying to disassociate my – like I have an EA account that's attached to my Xbox Live account that I can't separate because the EA account is tied to my old Maximum PC email address that nobody has access to anymore.
Right.
And it's been a many years national nightmare to get this done because when I set up the EA account, they didn't even ask for birthday. Now your birthday – is what they use to verify your realness.
This is a problem with logins changing.
And that's why they're the worst company in America.
It is, actually.
So AT&T, the process is you talk to a robot or a real person online, and you got to give them the IMEI number, which is the unique identifier for the phone. You have to send proof of purchase.
It's like a VIN number for your phone.
Right. The proof of purchase that you actually bought that phone. So I'm in that process. I have to fax over my receipt.
Your Apple Store receipt?
You still have that for your old phone?
You can get it from email.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
So I use a service that sends PDF, because I don't have a fax machine.
Yeah.
So I have
a fax machine if you ever need anything faxed.
You can use the free
services. Are you also a notary?
No, I'm not a notary.
Maybe you should look into that. That's a useful skill you could add to your repertoire.
Yeah, go around stamping papers everywhere.
I have to have notaries all the time. I could just come over here.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to
get
your
little rubber stamp pad and your little embossing.
Do you have
to
have a witness too to be the notary?
The notary is the witness.
Oh, so I'm an impartial observer as a notary. Yes. I wonder. Yeah, you have to take a class. Is it like a correspondence?
Yeah, there's a little course you take, and you become
officiated
by the state.
You have to be basically a paralegal.
You have to look at like a ID and know.
Yeah,
the
I mean, you basically
they
have.
They
you basically need the skill to sit there and watch somebody sign a document.
How much do you pay a notary usually?
Like $40.
Really?
Well, having said that, it's because I have to have stuff done when I sign a contract. It has to be done in like triplicate, quadruplicate, whatever you want to call it.
So they charge per hour or per signature?
It's per document.
You should advertise yourself as the high tech
boss. It's such a as we move towards a paperless environment. I'd like to think there'd be like online notaries at some point where this can all be done virtually. Where I don't have to go to someone's scabby
little
office.
I think that defeats the purpose.
No, you got to do it in person. And yeah, you should.
I could literally put myself in the phone book
as
a
live journal
Will
about
Smith, world's greatest notary.
There you go.
Because who wouldn't want to have their shit notarized by Will Smith?
Yeah, I know, but how do you back up that claim? It's not like...
Do you think
I guess there's like a million...
Speed.
There's a million places in the world that say world's greatest burgers. I mean, how do you...
World's greatest cup of coffee. Yeah. It's not really...
Congratulations.
No one has to back that shit up.
You guys made it.
Did you just watch Elf?
No, guys.
Okay. Is this... Maybe there's some twist you could provide to the service. You know how they have like they have comedy traffic school? Maybe you could be like a comedy notary.
Or I could be I was thinking something really vulgar, a notary. But, yeah, okay. That's good. You're saying the notary happy ending? It's a bad idea.
No. It's really people to die.
What?
I was thinking about happy ending?
The neon sign. You're driving down the street and you're like, I'm looking for a notary.
Yeah, if you're going to pick the...
Notaries and a sincere massage.
Backdoor notary.
I'm just telling you, world's greatest notary. That's what I'm going by. I'm going to go figure out what it costs to be a notary. Okay. I bet I have to take a class.
Is this like a Ponzi scheme where it like costs more to be a notary than you could ever make back?
No. Richie right? Lessavoy
I'm
going to
sell you a pamphlet about being a notary.
Our production guy in the future.
Rich Zito?
No.
Richie Lessavoy.
Richie Lessavoy.
Oh, yeah, of course.
We probably shouldn't use his last name. But
no, he's nice. He was a good guy.
He's a good guy.
He looked a bit like Mario.
Yeah, but he's a notary.
Yeah. Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I always got shit notarized.
You just want a stamp.
Combination like notary glory hole. Yeah.
No,
this is
stamp comes through.
Yeah, exactly. There's a slot at eye level for the documents, and there's a little hole at waist level. You get it all done at once. Why not?
This is the best podcast we've ever done.
This is an Adult Swim cartoon.
Well, unlock your phone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But you gotta fax over.
Oh, that's what we were talking about.
You
gotta
fax over the proof of purchase and your account has been good standing. But if you do that, your old iPhones, you can use them on other networks.
I don't know. I mean, this seems like it's only fair since we paid for the phone
and 2 years of contract.
Absolutely right. Good. Yes. I mean, very rare though it is for me to say this. Good for AT&T.
Does this mean that you can then take like that phone to Europe or whatever and use it with other SIM cards and all that?
As long as it's GSM, that's fine.
That's good. But it won't work for one's current. Like if I paid full price for my iPhone 4S, which I did. Will they unlock that as well?
They will not unlock that unless you are either out of contract or you've paid the fee.
I'm going to go get my phone unlocked.
That's a nice example of a consumer
friendly move. Yeah, totally. Cuz you're still with AT&T, your account's in good standing. You could get your phone unlocked.
That's fantastic. That means next time I go to Europe or Mexico or something, I just buy a SIM card and boom, I'm in business.
Well, and it also means that, because we're in the business, we get the new iPhone pretty much every year. And then, I usually sell the old one to subsidize the cost of the new one. That it's going to make the new ones much more sellable because I'm not going to have to be, so the old one's not going to have to be concerned with
selling it to an AT&T person.
Yeah, exactly. And so you can be on a different network, but hey, I've unlocked it for you, so it's all good.
That's the reason I couldn't sell my iPhone 4 because I had the new firmware, and those people who buy used phones mostly are on T-Mobile that don't have the iPhone, and they know which firmwares work for them.
That's great.
On the unfriendly consumer side, Verizon introduced this week, and I'm just going to make this real short, but they introduced you're upgrading your phone fee. So now if you upgrade your phone, it costs, I think, $30. Is that right?
$30. Which AT&T charges, I think.
They charge a $28 fee for the same thing. It's also horseshit. It's like the activation fee. These are fees that they should build into the cost of their service rather than to pass on to the consumer.
It's like that convenience fee you pay when you buy tickets online.
That's not a convenience fee.
Bullshit.
It's not a convenience fee.
You know, some places even charge if you pick up your tickets at will call.
Oh, really?
They'll gouge you every which way.
The DOJ finally filed the ebook lawsuit.
This has been coming for a while, right?
Yeah, we knew it was coming a couple weeks ago. It seems like everybody, three publishers are going to fight it. Everybody else settled, and Apple. Apple's fighting it too.
Right. So the accusation is that Apple has colluded with a bunch of publishers to set the price of
ebooks. Look at that fucking squirrel on my bird feeder.
Ow, my neck. Ow.
Oh, sorry, Norm.
Isn't that cool?
No.
Squirrels are not allowed to.
That squirrel yesterday was so fat getting off of the bird feeder that he couldn't run when I took the dog out.
But like,
he just kind of waddled away because he ate so much seed.
He's going to knock over your bird feeder.
Isn't that animal prejudice?
I'm not in the business of feeding squirrels. I don't have that kind of.
What difference is it, mate? It's all nature. Why do you only want to feed birds?
10 times the amount of seed that birds eat.
What do you have against squirrels?
I don't like squirrels. He eats all the bird seed. That's what I have against him. He's a pig.
Wow. We could put poison in
it. I have to warn Leah not to listen to
the lack of
birds,
too. Oh, I guess. Fucking asshole squirrel.
Leah and Logan, you're going to be persona non grata.
I'm comfortable with this. I'm willing to take the risk. Oh, that squirrel. How does he get up there even? I don't even get it. He has to jump from the fence or something.
Well, they're quite agile.
I understand. They're
squirrels
agile.
And cats.
Sorry, ebooks lawsuit so filed by
you're
the DOJ.
So and this is antitrust, right? You're not allowed to get to secretly get together with your competitors.
Yes.
Not competitors.
No competitors.
Why? Because all the ebook companies, all the publishers have basically got together with Apple and said, yes. Hey, look, rather than have a price war, which no one's going to win, let's all just agree that we're going to set the prices. And that is illegal. You cannot do that.
But for books, how does that work? Because you're not selling the same book.
Well, so here's the thing.
The competitive advantage isn't price. It's which books you have.
No. They said what happened was Apple met with the publishers, and it's unclear whether it was independently or all at once.
Right.
And said, look, Amazon is destroying your ebook model because they're pricing everything at $10.
Yes, at a loss.
And they're loss leading books to increase the ebook market share, to increase the number of ebook readers out there.
Right, right.
We think you should do this agency model thing where instead of Amazon, previously ebooks were treated like a wholesale product, just like traditional books are, where Random House says, hey, I will sell you these books at this cost, and then Amazon figures out what they price them at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What happened was Apple said we should change books to the agency pricing model where you fix the price and we just take 30% of that and you get the rest. The problem is that they all got together at the same time and in the same places and had backroom secret meetings in New York restaurants.
All of these companies, these are major publishers, and Apple is a major company. They all have a lot of lawyers, and they're all very experienced in doing business. When they're having all these meetings, isn't there someone aware of the fact that this is illegal?
I would assume so. Like when the agency thing was introduced, my first question was, how is this not price fixing? And everybody was like, oh, well, you know, it's probably there's probably an exception for books or something. We don't know.
So the story I read this morning about this, the angle really was that this is a big victory for Amazon, right? Because this was an anti-Amazon practice that they'll now benefit from this investigation.
Well, I mean, and the unfortunate thing about it is that what Amazon was doing isn't necessarily good for the book publishers in the long term, which in turn can be bad for us as consumers of books in the long term as well. I mean, okay, two things. Book publishers are kind of middlemen in a lot of ways. Like they're much like the music publishers. They're in a position of finding good stuff, and then promoting it to a mass market and delivering it and binding it and publishing it and putting it in trucks and sending it to Barnes & Noble.
But that was in the business model where you actually needed to, you know, front the money to writers or actually publish it and get it in stores and distribute. Right.
And in a world where self-publishing isn't a crazy niche for people who are...
No, self-publishing is legit now.
Yeah, I mean, self-publishing used to be a vanity thing, and now it's completely real.
There's a book in the marketplace right now, I think it's called something like 50 Shades of Grey, which just got... The movie rights just got sold for like $5 million.
It's sassy.
It's like erotic. Yeah. One of these 9.5
weeks. It's an S&M book.
But that was self-published.
Yeah. Huh. Well, there's Amazon? A lot of stuff. We know Dan Emmerich self-published his book.
But a lot of it's promotion. So, like, Apple has little incentive to... or Amazon to promote a self-published book the same way they would a big publisher's book if there are better deals for the big publisher.
That squirrel is still on the feeder.
Get off it. Let it go.
Nemesis.
You got to pick your battles.
I'm going to pick a battle.
There's actually a really good article for self-publishing about what happens if you set your book free, like the discount model.
This is Cory Doctorow's thing. He's been doing this for years. He's given away free versions of his ebooks,
which pushes you can kind of game the recommendation system.
Yeah.
So because so many people download your book because it's free, and people are always on the Kindle store.
Oh, well, that's not what Cory Doctorow does. But.
Well, maybe it's different, but. It pushes your book to the top of the list, and then once it's paid again, it's still at the top of the list, and you make much more money.
Yeah. Well, that's the same thing people have been doing in the App Store on Apple for years, is they'll do a price drop where they make the app free for 5 days.
And it works for everyone.
And then it bumps up to the top of the list.
Yeah. I mean, there are plenty of people, you know, looking to buy books or read books.
So I read an interesting article on the internets the other day about cheeseburgers. Do you guys like cheeseburgers?
Love cheeseburgers. Who doesn't?
The interesting thing that I read about this, because I was, you know, it's that time of year that you start thinking about making your, you know, your first cheeseburger of the summer out in the backyard on the grill. I mean, you guys don't, because you live in apartments and don't have grills.
I guess Jewish people.
What?
Don't like cheeseburgers.
Why not? Oh, meat and cheese. Yeah, I guess not.
Not kosher.
Yeah. Well, okay. Except for the Jewish people. All the rest of us love cheeseburgers. Did you know that the cheeseburger is unique?
And Hindus.
Hindus as well, yeah.
There's actually quite a few people that
there's lots
like
of people don't eat beef or cheese. Okay, so.
Well, we really opened the door to that question there, didn't we?
I really like cheeseburgers.
The cheeseburger is a sandwich.
Yes, the cheeseburger is definitely a sandwich.
Let's say more controversial things.
Hot dogs are also sandwiches.
Burritos are
buns.
Sandwiches.
Nope, no bun on a burrito.
Okay.
He's cleaning out the entire goddamn bird.
Wait, what's
theater.
The difference? So does it in order to be a sandwich, does this it have is to be a, two separate is, pieces of bread?
I loved one, opening this door.
One piece yes. of bread that's just rolled around is oh, not dear. A sandwich.
This
right?
is a hard fought battle on semantics. People say burritos. Some people say burritos are sandwiches.
I don't subscribe to that.
Between two pieces of
or cheese
wheat.
You can have a cheese sandwich. Cheese. Grilled cheese is yes. still
no, but a burrito is one piece.
Burrito's not really bread.
A tortilla.
What about yeah. a falafel?
Like rolled in flatbread?
Yeah.
I think if we're gonna if we really want to go here, I would say that in order to
Hero's
be
a sandwich.
In order to be defined as a sandwich, there has to be two
or
separate
open
at least
sandwich.
Two separate pieces of bread.
Yeah, what about an open faced turkey sandwich or a Kentucky hot brown?
But even with an open faced sandwich, aren't you given the lid that you can choose
no,
to put on?
Never have the lid.
Then it's not a sandwich.
I guess because it's two pieces because, sometimes.
Because it's not being sandwiched. If you think of sandwich as a verb, sandwiching is to put something between two other things and kind of squish it together.
Arguing semantics.
So is a hot dog a sandwich?
Two pieces of bread.
Well, that's a tricky one, isn't it? Because the roll can become separated into two pieces oftentimes.
Yes. And it's just meat between two sides
of a hot dog. I don't think a hot dog is a sandwich.
I think a hot dog is a sandwich. I disagree with you strongly.
I don't like it when people call burgers a sandwich. They're looking at it's clearly a burger.
Clearly a sandwich.
This is a good sandwich.
But a burger is a subset of the sandwich.
And it does qualify in the sense that there's two separate pieces of bread.
We're treading over material that has been covered on infinite podcasts in the past, you
has
realize.
It?
Yes, this is an incredibly old.
I've never heard
this
it.
Is every bit as ridiculous as the waffles and pancakes thing.
What's the waffles and pancakes?
Which one's
thing?
Better, waffles or pancakes?
Waffles.
Wrong.
Yeah, there's clearly no discussion exactly. to be had.
Come on. Nooks and crannies.
Yeah.
Now, if you say which is better, waffles or English muffin,
it's a waffle,
then I would think.
An English muffin is a complete – it's a piece of bread. It's not griddled bread, griddled batter.
I'm just saying in terms of preference.
Waffles are clearly superior because they're designed to trap the syrup.
Ice cream
the syrup
or olives.
Can't just run off it.
Yes. Oh, you're wrong. The good pancake, the syrup absorbs into
the
pancake.
Nope. Like you ever finish – when you order pancakes, you ever finish the pancakes? Never. No one.
And also, I'm a big believer that food is as much about texture as it is about taste.
Yeah.
And with a waffle,
you get
that crispiness
outside,
that you don't get with a pancake. Yeah.
Batter on the inside.
Now, okay, the Belgian waffles, the yeast risen ones, like those ones we had in Seattle that time, those I will agree are better than pancakes.
So the best waffle
like,
versus
yeah,
the best
Yeah, but I'm talking
pancakes.
About like bullshit Eggo. Well, I'm talking about like a proper waffle.
9 times out of 10 when you get a waffle. See, you did it again.
What?
We're arguing about something. Hey, guys, guess what? Can the Enterprise beat a Super Star Destroyer?
But this is why people listen. This is what they want.
These are old, ridiculous
arguments.
Do you
think anyone listening to this podcast gives a fuck about antitrust?
No, that's why I said, why should we bring it up?
This is some vintage stuff right
here. The cheeseburgers.
Yeah,
the
okay. Cheeseburgers. So what about cheeseburgers?
The cheeseburger is a unique product of a post-agrarian society. This is the premise.
How You're so? Saying that so this, 100 years ago,
do,
150 years ago,
do,
we
do
could
elaborate,
not have
Will.
The cheeseburger.
Would you like to know more? There's this guy who wrote a great blog post, and I'm going to try to find it here. His name, he has a funny name. His name is Waldo Jackwith.
Okay.
And he sat down, he lives on a farm, and he raises his own livestock and has a garden. And he thought, I'm going to make a cheeseburger from scratch. So
these are like the people who are completely self-sustainable.
Right.
They teach their kids.
Well, what's interesting about a cheeseburger is you have to draw on pretty much every farming discipline
in order
to create it.
So at first he thought, okay, well, I can slaughter the cow because I do that every year and blah, 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 blah. That's no problem.
The patty, pouring apart.
But then he started thinking about making the bun. So then he has to grow wheat and he has to take the wheat to a mill and have it ground into flour so he can make the bun.
Yep.
And he has to raise chickens to make the dough for the bun,
right?
And all sorts of other stuff. And there's obviously trace stuff like salt and sugar and things
right.
like that.
And then for the cheese,
too.
You've got to have dairy cows.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you have to have dairy cows and you have to slaughter
Could you get the milk from the cow and then slaughter it for the beef and kind of
different kind of cows usually.
It has to be different?
No, not necessarily, but dairy cows don't make good beef. And
you see, and this is why, and this is what kosher is all about, right? That they don't like the fact that
a lot of the kosher stuff has to do with food safety and a time before refrigeration.
Right.
So the reason you didn't mix meat and cheese had to do with milk of the mother and meat of the son.
Well, that's the, but there's also kind of like, there is kind of like an ethical kind of moral weirdness about I'm taking your milk and your flesh. Like, it's just all kind of just seems
I'm not
immoral.
An expert on this, but I think that the whole thing was about.
Can we have like a rabbi spoilage. Come on, like a former future
yes,
podcast and
absolutely.
We'll get into
just
this.
Like, we'll get him right on after the anthropologist.
Okay.
The shellfish thing is the other thing that was definitely
bottom. Well, bottom safety. Feeders. So
because of all the different places, the lettuce comes ripe at the end of summer. I mean, tomatoes are end of summer. Lettuce is in spring and fall. The cattle are usually slaughtered in the wintertime. There's no way to actually assemble all of this without a massive food supply chain.
Mm-hmm. You need to grow the lettuce and the tomatoes at a certain time of year. Yeah.
So prior to not industrial farming necessarily, but a post-agrarian society, so post-farming as the main business for everyone,
okay,
we couldn't have made cheeseburgers. Because you wouldn't have had all the stuff at the same time, at the same place, and it just wouldn't work out.
Fair enough.
I thought it was very interesting.
Or you have a really crappy cheeseburger.
Yeah, it'd be like a burger.
Now I just want a cheeseburger.
I know.
Let's talk about – okay, because I know this is further down the list, but it's the perfect time to talk about the perfect cheeseburger.
Oh, yeah.
Is there such a thing?
Oh, I think
now this
maybe.
Is – yeah.
I don't know. We don't know.
Yes. So, Gary, have you heard of Modernist Cuisine?
Heard of what?
Modernist Cuisine.
No, is that a – what is that, a magazine or something?
No, it's a book.
It's a bunch of cookbooks. So Nathan Myhrvold, who's a guy who was at Microsoft for a long time.
He was the ex-CTO of Microsoft.
Okay.
So someone who is wealthy. Think of Gabe Newell, but instead of Gabe Newell going to make video games when he left Microsoft as a billionaire, decided to go into cooking.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And Nathan Myhrvold was the CTO before Ozzy.
Yeah.
We were just saying the other day when we were talking about James Cameron that having a lot of money and a very strong interest in something is that's a potent
allows you to explore that. And these are people, I mean, he's a very technical person because he was the CTO of Microsoft in its heyday.
Right.
And he loves, critical thinking and analyzing everything. And with a lot of money, you could do a lot of cooking. So he practiced sous vide and discovered that sous vide,
he was into molecular gastronomy to make a sous vide cookbook.
Right. Basically. And there were no good cookbooks back in the early thousands for sous vide because it was a technique that had been developed, a long time ago, 50 years ago, but really didn't grow in popularity until the past decade.
What is this technique?
So sous vide is where you put a piece of meat or a vegetable, protein usually, in a vacuum bag and then submerse it in water at the temperature you want the end product to cook to. So say you want a steak to be medium rare, you cook it to 130 degrees. On a typically the way you would get it to 130 degrees inside is you put it on like a 500 or 600 degree grill.
Right.
And just kind of try to time it right so that the inside ends up at 120 degrees, 130 degrees where you want it.
A burger that's been boiled in a bag doesn't sound very appetizing.
But it's in a vacuum bag. So
there's no water coming in contact
with it. So just perfect temperature. And then you sear it afterwards to get the crispy
edge. Basically, it lets you make perfectly cooked meat without any kind of without any kind of risk or it's much easier.
We're gonna have to introduce you to sous vide. So Nathan Myhrvold wanted to.
I mean, is there a place you can go and have a burger that's been cooked this way?
Well, we should talk about that next week.
We absolutely will talk about this next week.
All right. There's some relevant content lined up?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Okay.
Oh yes. So Nathan Myhrvold decided with his millions of dollars.
Wait, are you going to go fight that squirrel?
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on. I got to see this. He's chased it off. It's going. That's just mean. That squirrel wasn't bothering anyone.
Ran along the fence.
Look how bad
what a bastard you are. Poor squirrel. He's just trying to make his way in the world.
Running out, holding his broom.
Philly's belly.
Do you awake at night? Like your eyes open?
Probably
like
trying to stuff some extra
clutching a broom.
That squirrel, that bird feeder was full yesterday.
He's trying to take some seeds back
worth
to
of
his
seed.
Family.
It is $10 worth of seed. And he's the little fat fucker has cleaned it out.
Wait, squirrels have no families.
But you wouldn't have a problem if there was a bunch of hummingbirds gorging on
it. I love hummingbirds. They're nice. And their stomachs are the size of a pea.
Animal prejudice.
Yes. I'm perfectly comfortable admitting this.
Animal racism.
I'm just going to get a squirrel feeder, one of those things that has a corn or cob on it. And it spins them around and flings them off.
Wow.
What?
I don't like this side.
It's like a ride for them.
This is an ugly side that I haven't seen before.
Well, hates a squirrel.
So anyway, we met the Modernist Cuisine guy.
So about 10 years ago, he started this company. He actually had another company.
It's a venture capital thing.
Yeah, it's a venture capital. They buy patents and they do a bunch of research. And he decided to write a cookbook. And it's called Modernist Cuisine. It's about 10 years in the making. And he basically bought all the scientific equipment, brought scientists in and professional chefs in.
Because cooking is science.
It is.
Yeah. If you ever watch Good Eats, that's why Good Eats is such a fascinating show, right? Because he gets into the science of why cooking works the way
it does.
It's
all physics and chemistry.
Right.
So
and biology.
And biology. And so with much experimentation, they basically figured out how to make the perfect dish for every common dish.
Okay. Well, not for every common dish, but they went through a bunch of common dishes, and they applied what are the things that spin around real fast to
centrifuges.
They use centrifuges. They use macerators and all sorts of other crazy stuff.
Can you really achieve perfection in cooking, though? Because
that's what they believe.
It's a matter of taste. Well, it's not objective perfection.
So there you go. As a computer scientist, he believed that he could objectively perfect cooking.
With a combination
of
blind
testing. Right, but I could still try that burger and say, you know what? I prefer one made on the grill. So
it's possible.
Who knows?
It is absolutely possible.
We all like different kinds of burgers.
But this is his belief.
Okay.
So they've created this massive tome. It's many thousands of pages. It's like five volumes. And I think it's like $500 for the cookbook.
Okay.
It has these gorgeous photos on the inside and technique and
so is this aimed at chefs or?
It's aimed at the modern.
Initially was aimed at chefs.
Right.
Okay.
But it is a, you know, it's a journal of their entire process and the results.
And photographs in the whole night. Like this gorgeous photography.
So some examples, you know, he describes how to cook the perfect chicken.
Right. Roast chicken.
Roast chicken.
So something where all the meat is perfectly cooked all the way through. Because the trick with roasting a chicken is that the thighs and the legs need to be at a higher temperature than the breast, because the breast will be overcooked if the thighs are fully cooked and the thighs will be undercooked if the breast is all the way cooked. And then get a crispy skin on it as well.
Oh,
as
that
another,
crispy skin's the best.
Yeah. So they made something that the skin is literally crisp like sugar candy. You know, like you flick it
it
shatters.
Oh my God.
So going back to how we got to this is one of the stories, and they have a video about this on their site, is how to cook the perfect burger, what they believe to be the perfect cheeseburger.
Okay.
And so you got every ingredient. So you talk about the bun, and it needs to be a certain type of wheat, and it needs to be a certain type of yeast.
Now, I've said this many times before. I think the bun is one of the most critical
components. They absolutely agree.
Yeah.
Because as a fan of texture, they needed to get the right, you know, the right bun.
Like
the right,
you don't want it too firm. You don't want it too soft.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You don't want it to be too absorbent, because then you lose all the salt.
Right.
So from the bun to the patty, the patty was really interesting because they sous vide. They made their own patty. And
unlike most hamburgers where you take ground beef and you kind of mash it all up and you shape it into a disc.
Right.
What they did was took the strings of meat that come out of the grinder, kept them aligned, rolled them up, and then cut the slices down the length of the strings.
Okay.
So
when you bite into the meat, it's not a jumble of ground
meat.
And
then in terms
of – it falls off.
Because you've got to go all the way back to the very source. Like what kind of beef are they sourcing?
Right. So they get
like
all
kind
that
of cows
too.
And you know where, what part of the meat – what
is it grass
fed?
Is it aged? Yeah. What's
right,
the deal?
Right, right.
I believe they use short rib for that, and they use sous vide cooking for that. And it took 30 hours to just cook the meat. At a low enough temperature, so it would be cooked. So it would be perfect.
Yeah, so they cooked the
medium rare.
Sous vide bath at 130 degrees Fahrenheit and or 50
for 30
degrees
hours,
Celsius,
just for the patty. And then they actually fried the patty to get the crispiness.
They cryo fried the patty.
So they dipped the patty in a dry ice. First.
Liquid nitrogen.
Liquid nitrogen. So that when they dipped into the fryer, which is the because you can't just toss it in the grill because you don't get all the nooks and crannies.
Right.
And into a fryer using the right oil.
To cook the outside evenly and get a nice crisp Maillard reaction crust on it.
But they use the liquid nitrogen so that it wouldn't cook. It would just be the outside. It would shock it enough so that you wouldn't – when you put it in the fryer, it wouldn't cook any of that perfectly medium rare patty on the inside. You just crisp the external part of the patty.
Yeah.
And then the cheese.
Yeah.
So what they wanted with cheese is they knew that for a cheeseburger, people would like the texture – of like an American cheese.
Okay.
Because you want
Velveeta.
You want it to be melty but not oily, right? Because you
right.
– Like if you melt cheddar, then it separates into oil and chunks and it gets really
but
gross.
But people like
not, it doesn't taste good.
Fancy cheese. Like they like, you know, a Gruyere or a cheddar. But when you melt that on top of a patty, it doesn't melt the right way that like American cheese would.
Mm-hmm.
So they want the texture of American cheese but using fancy cheeses. And so they made their own cheese.
Okay.
And then they went through the perfect tomatoes and the perfect lettuce, and then they used – what was it?
Mushroom ketchup?
Yeah, mushroom ketchup.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is one of the original ketchups.
Yeah. Apparently ketchup didn't used to be all tomato-based. It was mushrooms and other things as well.
All right.
So yeah, we got to talk to those guys. We learned about spherification.
Right. So we actually interviewed one of the co-authors of the book. of modernist cuisine.
Okay.
And they explain, you know, making that perfect burger. Now, it's a burger that takes 3 days or, you know, two days to make. And very few of us will ever eat that burger in real life. But it's become a mission now.
Look, this all sounds fantastic. And what this guy's done, I think this guy can look back and say, this was not a wasted life. Like, this is all good stuff. But having done all this, wouldn't you want to open a restaurant and serve this food to people?
I don't know that you could practically serve a 30-hour burger to people in a restaurant.
But you order it 2 days ahead of time.
It would be really expensive.
I think those people are
restaurants.
They're also independently wealthy, that they don't care about
commercialization.
Making that burger and making money from that
burger. So they did this
for themselves.
Just for the sake of science.
Yeah.
And so they could eat that burger.
If you've put all this effort into discovering something as fantastic as the perfect burger, wouldn't you want to put that out
into
the world
they're
and have
sharing
people
it,
enjoy it?
The way they're sharing it is with the books. And
well,
the
yeah, but
they publish
I don't have a fucking cryo freezer and all this crazy shit. How am I actually expected to go make that myself?
Well, so the interesting thing that we learned about the book from talking to the guys is that my perception was that a lot of it required really expensive, high-end kind of specialty cooking equipment in order to do.
Right.
And when we were talking to Max, the head chef of Modernist Cuisine, he basically listed a half dozen things off the top of his head that normal people can do in their kitchens with stuff you have today.
Here's how you can do it version.
Yeah. So while I don't think anybody's going to cryo fry their burgers at home, there are ways to make sous vide at home very accomplishable without spending a ton of money on equipment and stuff like that. So we've got some good video about that coming on
that
soon.
Sounds interesting.
Norm learned about spherification. That video is on the site right now. I don't want to get into it today. And Norm is purportedly a super taster.
I am a super taster.
So you say
25 taste buds per 5 centimeters.
Would you have said the same thing if she told you what
it was? Extremely bitter.
Uh-huh. I think if I could amplify any of my senses, it would be taste.
Really? Yeah. I would go with smell.
So Gary,
really? Why?
No.
Why?
Well, they're related. They're related. Gary, there is a certain number of people in the population who are categorized as super tasters.
It's 25, 50, 25.
Yeah. So 25% of the world have a high density of taste receptors on their tongue.
Right.
And they are more sensitive to bitter, sweet, and spicy foods.
But does that mean a really good burger tastes even better to you? Oh,
yes.
I'm jealous of that.
And I did this test where there's a certain chemical that super tasters can taste as extremely bitter, but other people, normal tasters, even like 50% of the population, will taste just as nothing.
Right.
And we did this test, and for example, Joey and I taste bitterness, different degrees, and someone, Wes, who also tried it, tasted nothing.
So it's kind of like how dogs can hear frequencies outside of human perception. You have that taste.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah. But also there's a risk because they've also studies have shown that people who are super tasters are at higher risk of heart disease because they try to overcompensate for bitter by putting too much salt in their food.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So you got to watch that salt.
So you got to watch your salt intake.
I would have thought that you would put less salt on your food because it would take less
to
achieve the effect.
You want to compensate for the negative
bitter
taste.
I see. Okay. Yeah.
So you got to learn to love the bitter.
Yeah.
I'll keep an eye out for that content. Sounds very interesting.
AOL patents sold to Microsoft for $1 billion. I don't want to talk about patents because they're boring, but apparently it's a big patent portfolio.
Cool purchase. AOL is cool. $1 billion.
No,
I keep forgetting that AOL
but they
is,
made
is a thing.
$1 billion. So they're cool now again.
Okay. Back in the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
Best Buy's CEO resigned.
That's kind of a sudden thing.
This was an interesting one because it seemed to come out of nowhere.
Well, they've been closing stores and stuff.
Well,
right?
Yeah, but I mean, they're saying that this guy was let go for quote unquote personal misconduct, which of course sets your imagination racing. Like, what did this guy do? Yeah. Was it sexual harassment? Like, who knows? I mean, it sounds like it doesn't sound good.
Expense report problems, perhaps.
Yeah,
personal misconduct.
Some kind of nefarious behavior.
I had a conversation with my housemates. I remember the rise of Best Buy, and we can't think
it
of
was
like,
the mid-90s.
A world without Best Buy. No, for us, I think it was the late 90s, early 1000s.
Oh, for me, I'll tell you, when Best Buy opened, it was a revelatory time in Northeast Tennessee.
That's the thing.
Because there wasn't
I don't think we got that on the West Coast until
because you
much
always
later.
Had Fries.
We had Fries, we had Circuit City, we had Good Guys.
Yeah.
And Best Buy.
Hold on. Circuit City and Good Guys both make Best Buy look pretty awesome.
Yes, because both of those were showroom style stores.
Dark and grungy, and you
good
had
guys
to talk
went
to
away,
some sleaze bag.
Went away real fast. It was all commission based. And then Circuit City tried to remodel itself to be like the checkout style of Best Buy. Mm-hmm. It was really strange, the rise of Best Buy, and I guess we can't imagine.
Talk about the death of retail and how we don't really like Best Buy. I still enjoy going to Best Buy and just poking around.
Well,
it's when you actually want to buy something and I have to talk to an associate that this experience starts to go downhill.
The difference is between buying something you know you want and going and browsing to look for something that you may or may not.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think we're fortunate that we're pretty well educated about the kind of stuff that we want to buy. And usually when I go to Best Buy, I don't go there to try browse and figure out what I want. I know what I want and I'll go there to get it.
Right.
But if I were like an everyday consumer going, I guess I want an HD TV, but I don't know much about them, I'll go to Best Buy and have someone explain it to me.
Wait, didn't both of us buy our TVs?
I bought my TV at Best
from
Buy.
Best Buy at Magnolia?
We did, but you remember how much bullshit they tried to feed us when we went there. I mean, we're I think smarter than the average mainstream tech consumer in terms of like, we know when we're being told something that is not true. And they will outright lie to you to try and upsell you.
Well, I have to say, you guys had a bad experience. I had a pretty good experience. The guy that sold us our TV was like, either he sussed out that I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Or he wasn't, like, he wasn't, I didn't get a line of horseshit from the guy that we bought our TV from.
They didn't try to sell you the $400 HDMI cable or anything?
No, he didn't. Okay. I don't think we got that,
but we definitely got the service plan.
Well, the service plan on something like a TV isn't necessarily a terrible idea because it's nice to have somebody come and take it away and bring the new one right there.
But that's where they make all their money.
But that is where they make all their money, yeah. So, yeah, the CEO of Best Buy is gone. I don't know that I care about that. Norm, why do you love the aquatic dinosaur theory?
I don't love the aquatic dinosaur.
Why not?
I think it's the worst
thing in the world. I think dinosaurs in the water, that sounds fun. Swimming happy dinosaurs.
So do you remember back in
all those
when you were a kid,
birds out there?
And actually, I love doing research for the story because it allowed me to Google like old dinosaur pictures. Mm. When you were a kid,
have you seen the hipster dinosaurs? By the way,
no.
You would love.
Are they wearing glasses?
Yes, they are.
Of course.
Okay. Are they all brontosaurus, which don't exist now? They're not real.
What, brontosaurus isn't real?
Brontosaurus aren't real.
There are no such thing
as a brontosaurus.
Why not?
Because they're actually what they thought was a brontosaurus is actually a different species.
Is this like the Triceratops was really a juvenile Torosaurus?
Yeah. Fuck. Same thing.
Is Diplodocus still real?
Which one is that?
Another one of the really huge ones.
It was the biggest one.
The Brachiosaurus is still real.
Oh, that was in Jurassic Park.
Yes.
Yes.
My favorite dinosaur. Do you want to take a guess? It was also in Jurassic Park.
Okay, let's name our favorite dinosaurs one at a time without thinking. We'll go.
Stegosaurus.
Triceratops.
They're not real dinosaurs.
Doesn't matter.
They're not real dinosaurs.
They're baby torosauruses.
What? Semantics.
Yeah.
No. So what Will's saying is that recently they discovered that the Triceratops, as has been portrayed in popular culture, the full three-horned beast was actually not its own unique species, but just a younger version of a bigger animal.
As a caterpillar turns into a butterfly, Triceratops turns into a torosaurus.
All right, that doesn't bother me.
I love the Triceratops.
I love Triceratops. I don't know why. It just always seems such a cool-looking dinosaur.
I know why you liked Triceratops. It's because you saw those claymation dinosaurs. No, the claymation dinosaur movies where the Triceratops would fight off the T-Rex. He was the only one that could do it because he had the crested skull.
Those claymation movies were done by Phil Tippett. Many of them.
The same guy who did Clash of the Titans, right? The original Clash of the Titans.
That was before his time.
Oh, okay.
But I had to go Google a bunch of dinosaur pictures. Now, do you remember
Stegosaurus would be my second place.
The plates on the back look cool. I guess the plates.
And they had that big hammer on the tail.
Yeah.
They could whack.
No, it was spikes.
So much of what we know about dinosaurs, we learned from reading those books as kids. The golden books. Painting is from, you know, the
40s. I used to make little models of dinosaurs. You guys have these little model kits you can make.
Did you do the wooden skeleton ones?
No, they were just these plastic kits.
They're the balsa wood.
Yeah.
You cut out the balsa wood and pop out the wood.
Maybe I had that. I think I had these ones that were almost like little cardboard plates that you could slot together.
Same thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
being a kid was great, wasn't it?
This biologist in the UK, I think his last name is Ford, but he wrote this article and went on radio and television.
He's more of a pop scientist,
television personality, you know, amateur biologist. I love the file photo of him is with a microscope and plastic dinosaur underneath the microscope. But he wrote this long article about his new theories, groundbreaking theory that maybe dinosaurs didn't live on land. The dinosaurs actually lived in the sea.
This is something that they fed us when we were in third grade.
Wasn't it both? Some were in the sea, some were in the land, some were in the air.
Cooled themselves off in the water. But what he was saying is
but there were like ones that lived in the water.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he was saying that a T-Rex actually was a water creature.
What? But it was the same bullshit.
The explanation was so stupid. It was that dinosaurs are so big and they weigh so much that if they were on land, their muscle structure and their bone structure wouldn't be able to support their bodies.
He's done calculations.
Calculations. No calculations are actually done. And he also said, oh, why don't we've seen dinosaur tracks on water, but why not tail tracks? Why don't we see, you know, fossilizations of tail marks?
So he's thinking that the tail dragging dinosaurs remain a real thing.
And that because they're in water, they actually use it as a rudder to swim in water, their tails. It got lots of mainstream media attention.
Right, because he's an idiot.
Because people like it when they hear new theories and they like to romanticize the idea.
Controversial theories, yeah.
You know, the idea of maybe dinosaurs did swim in water. One, it's not a new idea. Two, he had no research or calculations to really back it up. But it just sucks that this was, you know, on Daily Mail and BBC and a bunch of other websites.
How does this tally into, like, where dinosaur skeletons were found? Because presumably many fossils have been found far away from where there would have been a water.
Well, his argument that he had so many, like, ways of shoehorning his theory into real science.
I think we can move on, can't we?
I think let's move on.
Okay.
The upshot is the aquatic dinosaur theory does not align with the facts as we understand them to date, right?
Yeah.
That's the short version.
That dinosaurs lived on land based on our study of archaeology and biology.
Okay. Good.
All right, let's go.
You want to talk about the – I don't think you have it on the list, but what killed the dinosaurs and the asteroids and the ejecta from Earth?
We talked about asteroids last week, didn't we?
I'm kind of dinosaured out.
Really? How can you be dinosaured out?
We had a good dinosaur chat.
Okay. Well, not dinosaurs. We know dinosaurs also died 65 million years ago from
– a long time ago.
A asteroid hitting the Earth.
Right.
Right. This is about a 10-kilometer-wide – asteroid, 6-mile-wide asteroid, smashing into somewhere in Mexico.
Right.
And well, what made the Gulf of Mexico, right? That's the
theory.
Was
that what it was?
Yeah.
Possibly.
If you look at the Gulf of Mexico, there's a giant crater shape in there.
And it creates a kind of nuclear winter and the dinosaurs freeze.
Mass extinction event killing everything on land.
Right.
Basically. Was Morgan Freeman there?
No, he was underneath. He was in the caves.
Well, okay. except the furry mammals that then emerged, right?
Right. Well, yes. Not everything died, but this is 65 million years ago. We're talking about a 6-mile wide, so something the size of San Francisco, basically.
Well, slightly into smaller. The Earth.
Right, 7x7, 6x6, yeah. Smashing into the Earth. What happens, in addition to killing everything on Earth and nuclear winter, is that much of the Earth is shot off into the space as debris.
Like ejecta.
It is called ejecta.
Charlton Heston told me all about this at the beginning of Armageddon.
Damn dirty apes.
Yeah.
Charlton Heston?
So,
yeah, Charlton Heston does the voiceover at the beginning. Yeah.
Wait, I did not know that.
Is this how the apes came to be?
No. He's talking about Armageddon.
He's talking about how an asteroid strike wiped out the dinosaurs, and now it's going to happen again to Bruce Willis.
Yeah. Oh. Or Bruce Willis.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't remember that at all.
I don't remember
that. Move along.
Basically, scientists have calculated that more mass, like billions of tons of matter from Earth, was shot as a result of this into space, and they've calculated that these rocks, which could have had life on it, like microbe life, could have landed on like Europa.
Oh, okay.
And also other planets within our galaxy.
So they would get cometary orbits and blasts
around. So if we did find signs of life on Mars,
other planets within our solar system.
Well, no, within our galaxy, 20 light years away, they could calculate.
Well, it's like when Krypton exploded.
65 million years.
65
million
years.
Is that enough time to go at?
Yeah.
I guess 20 light years. Yeah. Why not?
So
that's crazy.
Yeah. So a million years, you know, another 10 million years later, life that could evolve on those planets could have come from Earth.
Wait, you're saying there could be planets 20 light years away that have dinosaurs on them?
Yeah.
Like Land
of
the Lost.
Or humans. Yeah.
I want to go there.
So like I said, it's just like when Krypton exploded.
Yeah, pretty much.
Still pieces of kryptonite floating around.
Yeah, exactly. Why not?
Seeding the galaxy with human DNA or Earth DNA.
All right. Okay, good.
You know, I like a good orange. The fruit.
I'm a fan of orange. Yeah.
What do you think came first, the color orange or the fruit?
I don't understand the question.
Well, the description of the color, was the fruit the first thing that existed that was the fruit as we know it, the modern orange with the, you know, orange skin and the orange interior and the pulpy and the citrus, or the description of the color orange?
I have no idea.
Norm?
I'm going to say the color.
Yes, you're correct.
Yes. And you know why it was named orange?
No.
Because of a place. Orange. In the UK.
Okay.
Yeah, the Prince of Orange.
And this all has to do with carrots, how?
That's why farmers who wanted to pay tribute to the Prince of Orange decided to make all carrots orange, and that's why we have orange
Prince
carrots.
Prince La Orange?
Yeah.
You want to know some trivia about orange?
Yes.
Frank Sinatra's favorite color.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I've been to his house in Las Vegas. Or Palm Springs.
Oh, did you ever hear that video of Eminem saying he solved the rhyming of orange?
Which was?
Because that's the other thing of trivia. Supposedly there's no word that rhymes with
rhyme
orange.
And then Eminem said, I can rhyme anything. And then he, like, on the spot, did some rhyme and it worked, and it worked with orange.
He did it?
Yeah.
Oh, good for him.
I'm running into the ground again. It's where I'm at today.
Let's keep going.
Life-size Enterprise A in Las Vegas, Norm.
This made me sad.
So, I know. Well, kind of. But if it sucked, I'm glad they didn't do it.
Okay.
Well, it wouldn't have sucked.
Tell Gary Goddard. Great. I think is Goddard. Gary Goddard.
Goddard.
I'm just going to call him
Did
Goddard.
He make rockets? Is he that Goddard?
No, he was the president of Landmark Entertainment, which you might know as a
theater chain, right?
It is a theater chain, but they also built amusement parks.
You know who owns that now?
Who owns it
Mark
now?
Cuban.
Oh, really?
I'm just full of information today.
Wow. Trivia Gary.
Very cool. In 1992, so we're thinking season 3 of Star Trek.
So just when it started to get good, Bearded Riker makes his
We're
appearance.
Talking about like when Star Trek
was... Bearded Riker showed up in season two.
Okay.
Yeah. But we're talking about
season 3 is when the show started
when it changed uniforms.
It's Locutus and all that, right?
Post-Pulaski and all that nonsense.
Oh, yeah. And when they changed uniforms.
When they got the collars. That's when you know.
Yes, no unflattering jumpsuits.
No. I mean, some of those people sell jumpsuits, but some people actually have the pullovers, and that's when you get the Picard maneuver, which is the tug.
Right,
not the actual Picard maneuver.
No, the actual Picard maneuver is an actual...
Okay, move on.
Moving faster than light speed, attacking against Ferengi so that it looks like you have two ships because you fly at the enemy so they don't know where to fire at if they're just using visual signals, and then you can fire both. He did that with the Pegasus.
We got more than we bargained for there, didn't we?
Thanks.
And that is known as...
bringing this topic up.
Picard maneuver.
But in popular culture, it became known as when he pulls his tunic down.
Well, yes, or Riker. The Riker maneuver is when he hits on a woman or when he shoulders forward. Because
like
Riker,
right. Yeah,
he just leans one shoulder and then turns away or walks towards you.
I kind of feel like that got a little bit like Horatio Caine on David Caruso on CSI Miami. You know how he always stands kind of sideways?
Never watched that show in my life.
What?
Nope.
Oh, you're missing out.
I don't watch procedural crime shows.
Really?
Nope.
Oh, there's a lot of good
Boring.
Ones out there. Okay. All right,
as
you were saying.
Yes. So 1992, at the height of Star Trek's popularity, this is when Next Generation was on the cover of Time magazine numerous times.
Absolutely.
Yeah, when it was on the cover of PC Gamer, Star Trek. Many times.
I put Vulcan's it on Star Trek. I put it on there a few times myself.
Yeah. Did you ever get to play Vulcan's Forge, the Star Trek adventure game that never came out?
I believe you mean Secret of Vulcan Fury.
Secret of Vulcan Fury, right. Did you play it?
No.
Or the first Contact game, which also never came out.
Really? That never came out either?
First Contact game never came out in a real engine. They came up with a proposal. Landmark Entertainment came up with a proposal to revitalize downtown Las Vegas by building a full-scale, life-size replica
of
the Enterprise.
This was 93. This was before they started blowing up the old casinos and made Vegas a family-friendly, fun destination.
They were looking to develop downtown, which was the most decrepit part of Vegas still at that point.
After MGM.
The gentrification of Vegas had already become.
Yeah,
already begun, but like downtown was always the grody part. Yeah.
This is, like, when we say downtown, we mean like where the Wynn is now, right?
No, the Wynn is right in the center of the Strip. Yeah. Downtown is kind of down towards like where the Stratosphere and that end.
Yes.
Oh, like where Circus and Rivera.
You know, with this guy, the cowboy.
Yeah,
that guy.
Yes.
Okay.
And development in Vegas had moved toward the Strip, where you had like the Excalibur and MGM and the Luxor. This is all before like the New York era. But they wanted to revitalize downtown, so they took proposals. And the proposal that won the contest was this life-size replica of the Enterprise, which would have been massive.
And not just the Enterprise, but the Enterprise A, which to my money is the greatest one. Are you sure? It was the movie Enterprise.
Right. The motion picture refit.
Hold on, but isn't that A?
No.
Is A the one,
in
A
motion
is
picture,
the Search for Spock one?
Yeah. Enterprise was destroyed, and then the A was the exact same design, but it was the A. Yeah.
With the swooshier back.
But the really beautiful sleek nacelles.
The tilted back nacelles.
Yeah. It wasn't the
circular That to me is the ultimate Enterprise design. The best one they ever did.
Oh, see, I like the D.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, they were going to build a full-size one.
Full-size
one. It was going to be a hotel, resort,
No, it wasn't
going to
be a hotel. So
but you could go in it and explore.
You could go in it. I mean, it would have been impossible to build out every floor. And that's what everyone imagines. You know, you would live in the quarters.
Like you could go in and
it would just
tea
be
Earl Grey hot.
Basically, a big monument, but you could have certain decks. You'd have a restaurant inside.
Right.
You'd maybe a ride inside it.
Yeah.
You may obviously build out the bridge.
Yeah.
Recognizable places.
Ten forward, you know, things.
Exactly.
A place you could go hang out.
Right.
And it would have been a phenomenal tourist attraction.
It would,
well, or a disaster.
Well, think about 1992, 93. Star Trek was money back then.
Yeah.
You could put Star Trek on anything and it would sell. But to build a something that would be almost as big as like, because how long is Enterprise? 600 meters. Like big as a skyscraper.
I mean,
basically.
I mean, it was bigger than the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
It was huge.
But horizontal.
Ridiculous.
And there was space to build it there. And you'd have light shining on there. It would make so much money. They budgeted it at $150 million. And everyone was on board. They had architects design it. They had it would have scaffolding to hold up the saucer section.
Okay.
They did all the structural math. Worked for 5 months. Did all the conceptual drawings. Paramount Licensing loved it, obviously. It went all the way up to the Paramount CEO, Paramount Studio CEO.
Yeah.
And then he kiboshed
it. The presentation, and he said, guys, no. Thanks, but no.
Because he was worried that if it failed, it would end up being this colossal white elephant.
A monument to Star Trek sucking.
Yeah.
And I think he made the right call.
No, I disagree.
Well, hold on. How many movies could they have made with that? I think it would still be there now,
and it would be the number one attraction in Vegas.
I don't think it would have been finished. They budgeted $150 million, and it would have cost $200 plus. They planned for like a 5-year build for that. They would never. It would never. There's no way that would have made its money back.
But really, because they build things that are that big and that expensive
in Vegas all the time.
I mean, they don't now because the economy sucks. But when during that boom period when the Bellagio and the Venetian, you have any idea how much the Venetian cost? I'm telling you, it's more than the Enterprise did.
Yes, but because they budgeted that low, they only want to spend $150 million because the Venetian can make money. It's a hotel. It's a casino. This isn't a hotel or a casino. This is a place where you pay $30 to $40 a ticket just to walk through, and that's
it. But that's the thing. It's a magnet that gets people to your attraction, and they spend money in and around it.
I think whether this was a good business decision is above our pay grade.
I would have loved to have seen it too.
Well,
I think it would have been a bad business decision, especially by the time it was done. We're talking about end of, you know.
Yeah, if it wasn't done until 98, then boom, they're fucked.
Enterprise.
It kind of makes me sad because it also reminds me of the Star Trek attraction they did actually make,
which
isn't there anymore.
Well, that's the thing. So after this was all kiboshed, they decided to scale it down because it was still – Star Trek was so popular. They wanted to do something in Vegas.
Right.
And as a result, because this failed, we got Star Trek The Experience, which they budgeted at $50 million,
right,
a third of the cost, scaled down. Build it into the Hilton, so the Hilton fronted a bunch of that. They didn't have to do any space.
Yeah.
It would be a casino, would be, you know, and that eventually was delayed and cost much more than they anticipated. Cost $70 million, mm-hmm, and we don't even have that anymore.
And when it was there, it was my favorite thing in Vegas. I'm so sad. I never went there.
See,
you missed out.
Everyone who says, "Oh, I would have this having the giant full scale Enterprise in Vegas would have been awesome."
I don't think it would have been awesome.
I think a lot of people, the idea is awesome, but a lot of people just like Star Trek Experience, which was incredibly interactive, they just wouldn't have gone.
Well, I never went to Vegas for fun back then.
The ride itself, the experience was tremendous, and the whole Promenade Quarks Bar thing was also a lot of fun.
The ride was the best, if you compare it to Star Tours, and I love Star Tours.
Shits on Star Tours.
It was so much better than Star Tours. You were beamed aboard the Enterprise.
They beam you aboard the Enterprise in a way that is actually pretty convincing.
Okay. Oh my goodness.
Does your soul make the transition too?
What happens?
Well, I'm going to walk you through this.
Okay, normal.
So
we'll do it for you.
You pay $40. You walk in.
Wow, $40?
Worth every penny.
Worth every single penny.
Do you get a drink or something?
No.
Do you get like a
every single penny? You know Star Tours. You're in Disneyland. You had to wait in this long line.
Okay.
And then you get a ride. And the ride is, you're on the Star Tours. Something goes wrong, right? It's a fun.
But C-3PO is there, right?
Sure. It's a fun simulator.
That's cool.
So you pay $4. First of all, you get the Museum of the Future, which is the largest collection of Star Trek memorabilia ever.
And it's kind of a fake timeline where it starts like the Wright brothers and you know, Amelia Earhart and then Zefram Cochrane.
Oh, okay.
And it takes you
and
into
get
the,
all
kind of
the costumes
the projected future.
And you see the props, the phaser rifle prop, which I'll never forget.
And they had some great,
amazing,
scale, not scale, but like huge
Enterprise
models.
Enterprise Voyager model.
I saw that stuff at the Air Space Museum when it was on tour there in like 91 or something. 96,
sure, this
99.
Is massive. It just immersed you in Star Trek.
And then they had like full size Borg,
full size armor
and stuff. Yeah,
and then you walk in. And you're ready to go for a ride. It's just like Star Tours.
And they put you in like a holding area, right?
In a holding area, you watch the TV screen and you see, put on
CRT
your seatbelts. And it's CRT.
Ooh.
And the guide's okay. You got to watch this. You got to watch the safety video, which of course, everything's very lame. And then suddenly, the CRT video starts fizzing out, and And the person goes, okay, well, calm down. Nothing's wrong.
Is there a person in there with you?
Yeah, there's a guide.
There's a guide.
There's
okay.
a guy.
Is he Ferengi or
you're
something?
He's like a Hilton guy saying, now we will take you on a ride. The Star Trek ride. And you're in, you see the lines of the floor even. So you stand in your it's just like Star Tours. The lights go out.
Completely pitch black.
And in a matter of 5 seconds, you hear that familiar chime. And you see the sparkle, your eyes looking at the sun.
Yeah, it's like you're in a transporter beam. And there's a rush of air.
There's a rush of
you're
air.
You're like a column of air, which is really cool.
Whooshes up on your face.
And then what's happening is while the lights are out, they're moving the set around you.
So you're in the
small
room.
So when the lights come back up, you're on the fucking transporter room of the Enterprise.
The room has,
are you standing on pads?
You're on the transporter pad. The floor looks completely different.
The floor has changed under you. Now it really feels like you're in a different place, even though you haven't moved.
Right. And then there is a Starfleet officer standing there, looks
yeah, running
Miles
the transporter console going, we got him, sir. We beamed him up.
We've been,
and you're like, what the shit?
You're in the transporter room. You're escorted onto the corridor of the Enterprise D.
You're aboard the Enterprise.
You get in a turbo lift.
Okay.
No, they take you to the bridge first. Well, no,
in the turbo lift to the bridge. All right. You go down the corridor, and then you're on the Enterprise D's bridge. One-to-one replica, full crew.
Can you sit
the cabin
chair?
No, you can't touch anything. You're a tourist. They've rescued you onto the bridge of the Enterprise. And then Riker, on screen, talks to the person in command, gives instructions, and everyone's touching the buttons, and you're told not to touch anything.
There are live bridge officers there working on the bridge console.
They pay people to sit there on the bridge and fake being
they
on the bridge all day?
They are members. Yes. It's got to be – we'll get to this in a little bit. But it is a complete interactive. You're like in a play. They're reciting lines.
It's like a holodeck experience,
yes.
basically.
Okay.
And the backstory is that there's a Klingon plot to go back in time and basically kind of like Terminator style, prevent Picard from ever having existed because he's such a pain in the ass in the 24th century.
By wiping out one of his ancestors, which is one of the people in your tour.
Oh my God. So you have to figure out who the person is.
Well, you never know.
And then you have to sacrifice.
One of you is Jean-Luc Picard's ancestor.
And they can't tell you who.
And the Klingons have tried to kill you. So Riker said you beamed into the future aboard the Enterprise to protect you.
Yes.
And the
Klingons is Riker just on screen?
Yeah. He's on screen. Okay.
Jonathan Frakes is not actually sitting there all day.
Well, I mean, what else is he doing? He's got to have time.
Playing poker. He's playing poker. It was funny when I visited because by then it was not that popular and it was just like me and my family. And we were like, oh, one of us is Picard. And the cast members they never go off script. And then you go on a turbo lift and you have the full turbo lift ride, including the turbo lift shaking because you're being attacked.
Yeah, I guess like rocked in the shaft. And again, what's happening is while you're in the lift isn't really going anywhere, but they rotate the set around you so that when the doors open again, now you're in the shuttle bay.
Which is how they film it, coincidentally. When they film like Star Trek the movie and they shoot, you know, that scene where Spock is in the turbo lift and he's on the bridge.
It's one continuous shot.
It's one shot. They just turn the set around.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
And then you go
and it's completely convincing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And then you're on, and then you go into a corridor again, and you go in the shuttle bay, and then you go on to the shuttle ride.
And then you're actually in the motion ride
portion.
And then
you get a motion ride. Which is a 5-10 minute long motion ride in the vein of Star Tours, which is a great ride.
And then you get hit by Klingon, like the Klingons of the Klingon warships are all around you, and there's like some Klingon dude going, "You human scum! I'm going to destroy you now!" And then the fucking Enterprise warps in
and destroys the Klingon ship, and you crash back into the Hilton next to where the other.
Oh, yeah, so now you go back through a time tunnel. Now you're flying over Las Vegas,
okay,
and you crash back down into the Hilton. And when the doors open again, you're back in Hilton. The Hilton guy's going, what the hell happened?
There's a janitor who goes, what's going on here?
It's fucking great.
And it's not like Back to the Future the ride where you just see that massive screen, like an IMAX screen in front of you. The ride that you're in, it's a full 360-degree viewing ride, which was new at the time. So it wasn't just the front. You could look up. Right. And you could look around. And they did all the CG for that
What if stuff. It was raining outside and the ride was in the sun?
Well, the night it was a night shot.
It's always at night.
So you get out and then you're ushered back out and this whole thing is like, you know, 20 minutes, which is the best 20 minutes.
It's the best theme park, best ride, whatever you want to call it ever. Mm-hmm.
And then
it so bums me out that it's not there
anymore. And then you walk out and you're on the promenade,
Deep Space Nine
of DS9,
which is where they sell you all the merch basically.
That's all
and Quark's Bar.
And you have Quark's Bar, but the best part
Quark's Bar
isn't just that it's Quark's Bar, but they pay a dozen full-time actors to go around and be the patrons, the regular patrons of the bar, and they all have the stories.
Yes.
And they all have real names. They all have like backstory and names. They have Klingons. They have Borg.
So the Klingons Ferengi. Will come up and sing Klingon opera at you until you pay them to go away.
They encourage you to get drunk on blood wine. The Borg has its own backstory of a Borg that he was rescued, and he now lives on DS9.
It's fantastic.
And the Ferengi are there to try to, you know, get you to buy stuff at the gift shop.
Oh, so the cast members who played the Ferengi, I always felt had the best deal because these guys work for tips, right? And so you go up to a Ferengi.
You don't think it's a little, tip
this,
pool?
This little dude. Well, yeah, but they want to get as many tips as possible. Okay. So you would go up to a Ferengi dude and say, hey, can I have my picture taken with you? And they would say, of course, completely in character, well, how much will you pay me, human? And they have to give them money to have their picture, to have the picture taken.
And the thing was, these were all Star Trek fans.
Wow.
And
the actors,
of course. So what happened now? Because it was like the mecca for Star Trek fans.
Right.
They would have these Star Trek conventions there.
Yeah.
And they actually built out two full scale bridges because they would have multiple simulations going at the same time.
Okay. Right.
So different. It was a huge cast. Eventually, they rented out one of the bridges for weddings and behind the scenes tours.
So I could have Jay-Z come sing to me in my birthday party.
That's why I do with the $500 million. Rebuild that shit.
And just pay people there the whole time.
Yeah.
Nonstop working the bridge. Yeah. It's like Galaxy Quest, right?
Yes.
Right. You'd hire William Shatner to
always
run a mission.
The thing.
With you,
I don't think
right?
you
or
get
Tim
Shatner
Allen.
For a million.
You get Tim Allen.
Yeah, you can drink a Romulan ale. You can get a Warp Core Breach, which is like this big drink for two people.
It opened in 1998 after I think it was in production for 5 years. First Contact came out in 98, so it was perfect timing for that. They also built a Voyager addition to it.
I never saw that.
It was a 40 ride.
That one.
Very similar to the Terminator 40 ride, and you had to be on a space station. A doctor actually walked you through, and he was a holographic doctor.
Oh, cool.
And it was a cool ride in itself, and it was all for $40 for both those.
God, why? I mean, and I guess...
What happened was Star Trek, they didn't make enough money.
Oh.
And the deal was Hilton thought that it would bring people in to not only ride the ride, but also gamble. And it turns out Star Trek fans just wanted to ride the ride.
Because the thing is, the Hilton's off the strip.
Yeah.
You know, and there is a space age. There used
even
to be a space
anymore.
Age themed casino there as well,
right.
Which was kind of lame.
But they just didn't make enough money
because the Hilton.
It
was just a shitty hotel casino. Like you'd have to make a special trip off the strip to go to it.
And nerds are notorious non-gamblers because they understand the odds of Vegas gambling. And
so it just didn't make sense financially. They couldn't come to a deal. Renegotiation the terms 10 years later. It was a 10-year contract. So in 98,
2008,
they closed it. And they sold all the props, and I think this
killed the cast.
They didn't kill the cast. This mall
him.
Developer
buried him in the desert.
Bought all the big set pieces, and has been trying to bring the ride back for the past 3 years, but they've never found a good place for it. But I would love to see that come.
I'm sad it's gone, but I consider myself lucky to have experienced it.
So. I posted a story about this, and if you've ever written the experience, there's this documentary online shot by one of the cast members who worked there for about 5 years, and it's called Star Trek: My Experience. It's not a real documentary because it's more like archival footage. He does narrate over it.
Mm-hmm.
He's an aspiring filmmaker. It's 5 hours of footage,
wow.
And he's not even done yet. He did this started this in 2009.
He needs an editor.
But basically, it's all the behind the scenes video ever from this ride. So
I might want to watch that. I'm a
all
nostalgia
the
trip,
extreme nostalgia. I like you tear up almost just watching it because it's these hardcore Star Trek fans, and you see all their like you see them going behind the doors, going to work every day, putting on the suits. And
oh, what a dream job!
And they talked. It was their dream job because these were all Star Trek fans, right?
Right.
And they talked about like one cast member who'd worked there almost all 10 years and had become revered because she was like the Vulcan, headmaster.
Right, the elder.
Yeah, the elder there. And it goes through the entire, all their company parties, all their photos, what they do in their off time, all the behind the scenes stuff, all the celebrities that would come through, all the famous Star Trek people. They have all the archival footage from when like Entertainment Weekly, all ET, Entertainment Tonight did all their promotional stuff for this.
Right, yeah.
right. So you see all the TV hosts go through the experience. It's wonderful.
Okay.
John Tesh made a ride through.
It absolutely wonderful.
I'm going to go check that out.
Yeah.
Okay. What's next?
StarCraft and Cognitive. I was going to talk about Hugo nominees, but it's on the site. Don't need to go through that. There's a couple of really good books in there. If you haven't read it, The Embassy Town by China Meevil is really, really good. And there's other stuff too.
And Dance with Dragons on it.
Dance with Dragons. I mean,
a lot of people think it's
a shoe-in.
Yeah.
Hugo voting's weird because Hugos are like you join a membership for the con that's hosting the Hugos that year to vote.
Right.
So it's like it's fans voting.
It's pretty prestigious.
It's a prestigious award. Yeah, yeah. Oh, no doubt. But it's kind of a novel in the way
is it
awards
just
go.
It's just, well, no, there's books
they,
and TV and all
sorts of
stuff. They
have traumatic presentation, which is TV, and Star Trek has only Inner Light and All Good Things.
Did you see that the
episodes.
Guy who wrote Inner Light is now writing a sequel?
Really?
What?
Yeah.
To Inner Light?
As like an e-book or a comic book.
Oh,
or something.
No thanks.
Yeah.
I'm out.
I mean, they're not going to film something.
What is this, yeah. like the 50 years in Picard's life on that planet that we didn't see?
No, it's like he has to go back. He goes back to the planet.
Oh, no, he doesn't need to go. Oh, well, you know what?
No.
I kind of would.
No.
I kind of felt like that story was a complete thought. I don't feel like.
That's exactly
he lived.
Right.
He never got the aftermath of that.
That's fine.
Wait, no, you did, because he brought the flute out. He did bring the flute out.
Yeah, he would occasionally get the flute and go back
to it. Well, it was a way of getting ladies.
That's right. It was all worth it in the end.
Dance with Dragons is on there. I started watching Game of Thrones finally HBO Go on the Xbox, which we'll talk about
in a
minute.
Yeah, we'll get onto that,
Let's see. StarCraft and Cognitive Science. We're running a little short on time here, Norm. Do you want to get into that a little bit, or do you want to just tell people to read the article?
No, read the article.
I thought it was good. And then a couple other things. Hotels are hacking the Wi-Fi and replacing the banners that go on sites by default with their own banners so that they can make fat money off of their $10 a night hotel Wi-Fi.
So it actually
if
wasn't
they're going to do that. Shouldn't they at least make it free?
I think it
is free. It's free.
Oh, okay.
It's on free Wi-Fi. The Marriott did it, but Marriott, the people running the Marriott didn't know. So when hotels provide internet, free complimentary internet to, guests, they contracted out to a provider, and there are hundreds of these different providers that buy the hardware and get it working, because it's no easy technical feat to get Wi-Fi working for 1,000 people living.
Well, yeah,
in
you were
town.
Right. Well, you were on the forecast the other day with a guy who was showing a 4,000 node Wi-Fi antenna.
Yeah,
basically,
it was crazy repeaters and they segregate.
And
the spectrum.
Hotel Wi-Fi is all still a crapshoot.
It is. Yeah. It is. But one of the companies that was providing internet had put in code so that when you visit websites. It would insert their ads on the websites that you like.
This is something I thought would be a good business a long time ago. Sell routers to businesses.
It's not a moneymaker. So it's an afterthought.
This is why I take a
MiFi
on the road with me.
Yeah. It's more reason to get a MiFi.
You got to wonder if the prevalence of 4G now that you've got these iPad hotspots, everything's 4G now, almost everything. A year or two, you got to wonder if the hotel Wi-Fi business, they're going to get squeezed more and more.
No, I think they're going to stop doing – well, what's more valuable to a hotel? Free HBO and TV, which I don't know anyone who watches that.
I haven't turned a TV on in a hotel room
in years. Dan Stapleton said the other day he would gladly give that up in favor of free good Wi-Fi.
Good Wi-Fi. Yeah, spending money on that.
I turn the hotel TV on.
I'd bring my – well, you spend more time in a hotel.
I just put it on like MSNBC. I just watch news.
I don't watch the news. So.
Don't you?
Nope.
How do you stay informed?
I have the internet. It's better than the news.
Okay.
All right.
And then the last thing is that Kaz has revealed Sony's strategy for revitalizing Sony.
This is Kaz Hirai, the new CEO of Sony.
Yeah. Yes. Sir Howard Stringer has retired.
Left the building.
Yeah. And Sony has been in bad financial state for a while.
It's been
getting
– it's one of the things that's not the end of the world, but it's a big company. They're pretty diversified. But a lot of the places where they traditionally made a lot of money have not been making a lot of money.
So Kaz, just in the last 24 hours, has revealed his – big picture plan to turn this all
around.
What's
the plan?
I just kind of skimmed through it, but basically there's going to be some layoffs. I think about 10,000 layoffs.
Which is very difficult for a Japanese company to do.
Wow, 10,000 jobs is a lot.
It's culturally. They just don't like laying people off.
Okay.
It's been it's a thing that basically you get a job at Sony and you work there for your entire career.
Right,
basically.
Right. Well, I believe you've got the story right in front of you, so you can confirm this, but I believe it's about 10,000 people. That's a small percentage of the company, but nevertheless, 10,000 is a lot of people.
Yeah.
I believe the big picture plan is to cut way back. One of the plans is to cut way back. I believe 40% they're going to cut back on the range of TVs that they offer because their TV division is fucked.
Yes.
They're getting crushed in television. Yes. The Bravia. No,
not the age of Trinitron.
The days of Sony being like the automatic choice for a TV. Yeah. They're very expensive. There are many other options available now that are just as good or better. And people are baffled by just how many different Sony TVs there are. And so they're going to simplify the line, which is very smart. And Kaz is saying that the big profit centers going forward are going to be digital imaging, which is cameras.
Yep.
Games, because their PlayStation division is doing pretty well, and mobile.
Yeah, so phones and tablets.
Yeah, yeah.
The TV thing is interesting because this is something that's going to face all the companies that have leaned big on TVs for the last 10 years. As we made the shift from standard def to high def, more people bought TVs at any given time than they had in the past. It used to be that you'd buy a 20-inch TV and it would last you 10 years. With the HD Switch in 2003 through like 2008, 2009, people have been buying a boatload of HD TVs. Panasonic, Samsung, Sony all benefited massively from that, as well as LG and Vizio and the other smaller companies. But now that gravy train is done. And so this is one of the things, this is one of the reasons they've been trying to push things like 3D and apps and soon 2K and 4K on us. But I don't think people are interested. I think HD is good enough for a lot of people.
I mean, I get what they're saying. I get what they're trying to do, but you can't ask people to keep rolling over big ticket purchases every couple of years. It's ridiculous. You expect a TV to last you a long time.
Yeah.
I think they need to follow the model of fewer models and better advertising Apple-y, of those models.
You mean? Yeah. Get Apple-y.
Yeah. Fewer models, I think, is going to make a lot of sense because it does. And this is not just Sony. A lot of companies do this. It's baffling when you look at the range of TVs on offer.
Yeah, there's no reason to have five gradations from awesome to terrible. Just make a really good one and a cheap one.
Like it, love it, gotta have it.
Yeah, exactly. So that'll do it for news this week, unless we have anything else we want to add. I'm going to play some music and we'll talk about what we've been testing. So I alluded to it a minute ago. HBO Go now works on Comcast for Xbox users.
Now, who caved?
All of us.
Who caved?
I don't know. I wonder if Microsoft, if people were so pissed off at Microsoft.
I don't think people
when that hit.
Nope. I think people are pissed off at
Comcast?
Comcast.
Apparently it still doesn't work on Roku.
Well, that's why I think Microsoft paid for it. I think Microsoft ponied up for Comcast because it doesn't work on Roku. It doesn't work when you do from iPad to Apple TV.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that means that Microsoft footed the bill for Comcast to get HBO Go on devices.
It seems to be the most high-profile rollout of HBO Go yet. Like, we've seen it already on iOS, we've seen it on PC, but you see, like, HBO already, they cut these very elaborate spots showing you the Kinect, you know, specifically for Xbox 360, these HBO Go spots. It's a big deal. And so when you load this thing up and you realize you can't get it because your cable provider won't allow it, you're rightly pissed off.
Yeah.
I have to say, I used the Kinect integration with HBO Go last night when I set that up in the living room because it was actually faster to go Xbox Series than it was to navigate up and move over like 10 pages.
The voice control is good, but this stuff, like,
no,
so,
no,
by the way,
the hand Kinect is
the
no
Samsung
good.
Smart TVs now have that rip-off technology. I just don't want to do it.
It's just bad.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that.
With the baby talking.
Yeah.
But we've all got it working because we're Xfinity customers, and you know what? It's pretty good.
I have to say, I was stunned at the video quality HBO Go.
Were you able to check if it's 1080p?
It is not
1080p. It's just high bit rate 720p.
Okay.
So,
but it looks good.
In terms of HBO content, if you're a Comcast subscriber, three of us are, there's a few ways you can get to the HBO content. Like for example, just say Game of Thrones, the new episode of Game of Thrones. You can either go on your cable box, the terrible blue menu.
I don't have a cable box.
God, I didn't even think to do that. I was like navigating through trying to find Curb Your Enthusiasm. I could have just said Curb Your Enthusiasm.
You can go to Bing and say Curb Your Enthusiasm. Here's the amazing thing. You can get rid of your cable box, put a TiVo back in, and you don't lose any on-demand stuff now.
Because you have Xfinity On Demand on the Xbox.
Well, and they're also Xfinity. They're rolling out Xfinity On Demand to TiVo boxes now, too, if you have the latest generation TiVo.
Okay, I'm going to make that switch.
Yeah, because that Comcast DVR is awful.
It's terrible.
I don't know how – I mean, the thing that it does where you can move from one room to the other is really nice and kind of convenient the three times a year that you use it.
So this is what's been holding me back. I can now get on-demand programming through the TiVo box.
Well, not exactly yet, but they're in the process of rolling it out to different regions
now. Okay, once that is locked in.
But you can get Xfinity On Demand on the Xbox, too.
Is that working now?
Yeah. Have you not used
it? It works. It's not great.
Not as good as HBO Go. It's the same similar
retro
interface.
Because I know that TiVo's
better than the blue box.
TiVo's got a sexy new DVR box.
Well, you know, the blue box is bad, but I like using the iPad app.
No, you use the iPad app, I guess.
That's
okay.
That's because the iPad app can program.
So when TiVo hits, then it'll be great because it'll work like any other TiVo app. And the TiVo iPad app is my favorite of all. Hmm. It's great because
I haven't seen that.
When you open the TiVo iPad app, it says it looks and sees what you're watching right now. It says, "Oh, you're watching Jimmy Fallon with I don't know whoever on. Give me an actor. Give me a show."
Antonio Banderas.
Okay, so you're watching Antonio Banderas on Jimmy Fallon. So it knows that you're watching Fallon. It knows who the guests are, and it says, "Oh, if you're watching this, you may also like Spy Kids 3D and
yeah." But that doesn't really work, does it? Just because he's a guest on the show doesn't mean I want to watch a bunch of his movies.
No, listen though. if you click on him, then it gives you the list of all of the stuff that he's available in on the services that you subscribe to.
Right.
So if you have Amazon Instant hooked up to it, Netflix hooked up to it, all the other stuff, it shows you all of the
that's cool.
You can search across. It's the same way that Bing works on the Xbox.
Basically. Okay. How cool TV that.
Holistic
yeah,
search.
Yeah. So like it gives you access to all of the places that you have the access to the content, which is really, really cool.
That is very cool because like oftentimes I'll say, like Leah and I were talking last night about how she likes Eminem.
Yeah.
And I said, have you seen 8 Mile?
Yeah,
and
she hasn't seen 8 Mile.
She said no. I said, well, that's... So I said, okay, well, we should watch it. I've got it on DVD, but I'm thinking, well, maybe it's on one of the services.
Yeah,
but
something easier.
I don't want to have to individually check Hulu, Amazon, Netflix, right. Xbox, you know, every single service to see who's got it. I just wanted to say Bing, blah, 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 and have it pull it up for me.
Yeah. So TiVo does that. Bing does that. Those are the only two places I'm aware of that you
That's
can search
great.
Across.
That's great.
Across. And I haven't seen, does Bing work inside like HBO Go?
I have not used Bing. I don't use Bing on
the
Xbox.
I think that would get me to use Bing on the Xbox. I need to investigate and see if that works.
And it's good. I mean, there's a vast wealth of content on HBO Go. You know, we think about all the TV series and original programs.
Yeah, it goes way back.
Movies,
too.
I mean, just great stuff.
It's so good on the iPad.
Yeah, but I don't like watching. Like, if I'm laying in bed on Sunday morning and feeling real lazy, I'll fire up HBO Go on the iPad.
But
I want to watch that stuff.
I keep it on the
side.
It's multitasking.
That Game of Thrones TV show is pretty good, huh? I can't believe nobody talked about that. I wish I had known.
Yeah, that one's
it snuck up on
secret,
me.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back and watch Eastbound and Down. I want to watch the last like 3 seasons of Entourage I didn't watch.
Yeah, I mean, I want to watch Deadwood. I never saw Deadwood.
Yeah, the Sarah Palin movie's on there.
The new Sorkin show.
Which was very good. Yeah, I mean, there's so much good stuff.
Yeah.
Curb, you know, just go watch all of Curb.
You know what's not so good?
What?
The old comedy stuff they have.
Oh.
You just realize a lot of that comedy from the 90s, which is not
or like Aulis and shit like that.
Well, comedians have like a 5-year lifespan, I think. I think this is what Adam Sandler realized early on.
No, but even like the style of comedy from back then.
That's what
then.
I'm saying. Like if you look at Jim Carrey, if you look at Liar Liar, it's a funny fucking movie when that came out. And you look at it now and it is powerfully unfunny. I think that comedy just ages really fast. Mm,
maybe so.
10 years from now, 40-year-old Virgin is not going to be a funny movie anymore.
Mm, I think. Maybe that's true.
Yeah. But I mean, so how do you explain something like...
You're trying to think of a comedy that's
I know the movie
is just as funny now.
Why is the name of the movie fucking blanking for me? Jack Lemmon, Walter Matthau, Marilyn Monroe.
Oh,
Billy
the
40
year old, the 7-year itch.
No, the one where they dress up as women. Why am I? Some Like It Hot. How do you explain that?
I've never watched it.
It's never going to be not funny.
Okay, I like Jack Lemmon a lot.
Okay,
Grumpy Old Men. I guess maybe it has to do with shtick. Like if you think about it, the comedians that don't age well have a really specific shtick. Like Jim Carrey made funny faces and made goofy noises and stuttered and stuff.
Right.
Adam Sandler acted like a man child.
Yeah.
So maybe right. It's Jack Lemmon and
be
Walter Matthau are just naturally
be
funny.
Smart.
Chris Rock is a funny says shit that is funny. It and doesn't smart. Have a shtick necessarily. Yeah. So maybe it's that you have to be a smart comedian in order to age well.
Maybe.
Anyway, yeah. HBO goes good.
Yeah, it's really, really good.
Really good.
We talked about the molecular gastronomy stuff. I have spent the last 2 weeks kind of off and on trying to adapt various arcade stick configurations to be 4-way, 8-way convertible so I can use them both for fighting games and shmups and stuff like that and classic arcade games.
Okay.
No luck. Didn't work. I wrote about it.
All right.
Although the nice thing is that as a result of writing about how it didn't work, I've gotten a lot of suggestions from people about ways it could work.
Mm.
So I'm going to investigate further and maybe build it like a custom stick, basically. Like build a custom fight stick or something like that that I can convert to work with arcade games.
Right.
Because, you know, the idea is that when you're playing, say, Ms. Pac-Man or Galaga or something like that, having an 8-way stick is actually a detriment. Because you lose precise control.
Uh-huh.
You know, those games are designed to have 4-way controls, right?
Right.
Or Pac-Man is.
Right.
So when you add that corner, the 4 corners, then you lose precision on turns for Pac-Man and stuff like that. Makes it hard to play those games. Anyway. Amazon Instant View on the PS3. Did you try that yet, Gary?
Yeah, I've been trying it a lot. This is my other great discovery. So Amazon Instant Video, of course, has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
But it's only been on, you know, computers and some of the
TiVo,
others.
Roku.
Roku. I don't have those services, but I do have a PlayStation 3.
Mm, interesting.
And I wouldn't usually watch Amazon Video on my PC because I don't want to sit in front of my computer and watch TV. You know, it's a lean back thing. But it was on PS3. I'll give it a try. We have Amazon Prime in the household. And I discovered instantly they actually have a really cool amount of content on there. So the entire run of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Okay.
Which is fantastic.
That'll be good for Gary TV.
The entire run of NYPD Blue, which is one of my favorite TV shows, procedural cop show. You wouldn't be interested, but it's one of my favorite
TV shows. I actually did
TV
watch
shows.
NYPD Blue, but that was before there were 50 million procedural cop shows on TV.
Well, it's one of my favorite shows, and beyond the first few seasons, it's not available anywhere on DVD, nothing.
Oh, interesting.
So this is the first place I've actually found the complete run of it, so I've been working my way through it. And I think there's an argument to be made that Amazon Prime could be one of the best deals for consumers out there right now.
Well,
it's pretty amazing.
If you buy a bunch of stuff from Amazon, for sure.
If you buy a bunch of stuff, so it's 2-day free shipping on everything, mm-hmm. and you get a phenomenal amount of free unlimited streaming video on Prime. Yep. So you can go onto Amazon Instant Video and pay just like you would on Zune or iTunes or any other PlayStation, Xbox store.
All they need to do is incorporate some type of Groupon type discounts that you also get.
But if you're a Prime member, there is a ton of content that is, that is thrown in for free.
And you can share. Your free shipping.
So the thing I'll say about Prime, the Prime Video stuff, is I've used it a fair amount. And it seems like it's – you know how there's like movies in theaters and then there's pay-per-view movies and then there's HBO or out on DVD. Then it goes to HBO and then it ends up on Starz.
Well, that's getting increasingly
and then
kind of messed up. A lot of movies now
are
hitting on demand before they're even in theaters.
Right. Well, like that Hannah movie. I watched that here for $10 instead of going to the movie theater to see
it.
The thing that's interesting to me is that Amazon seems like it's maybe one tier or half a tier below Netflix in that scale.
Yeah.
Like Netflix instant streaming. Because it seems like it's – like there's definitely good stuff in there, but it's not – there's like no Disney movies that just were in theaters. You don't see The Incredibles and stuff like that there. It's a little more it's like one step removed from the kind of immediacy of the Netflix. Like they're clearly not spending a ridiculous amount of money on that content, which is fine. But there's a lot of good stuff in there regardless.
If you buy stuff from Amazon on any kind of regular basis and you like to watch online streaming video, Prime is it's a no-brainer.
Well, so one of the things that's interesting to me is I was thinking about killing Prime a couple of years ago when I bought a Kindle and started buying ebooks and stopped buying regular books because, you know, I buy a book or two a week. And CDs. I've stopped buying CDs, started buying MP3s. I was thinking, oh, Prime's becoming less valuable, and adding on stuff like Instant and the book sharing and all that stuff has made it more valuable again for me, which is really cool, I think. I think it's a good thing.
The only thing that bums me out is there's no iOS version of Amazon Instant Video, which, you
can't imagine why.
Well, as much as I've railed against, you know, annoys me that some content is on some devices and not others, and there's no simple solution, I guess I get it. Amazon's not going to give that up to the iPad when, you know, they're trying to sell Kindles.
Right. Right.
That's why you can only lend stuff or borrow stuff.
On Kindles.
Right. Real Kindles.
And then, let's see. I watched Hugo this weekend, which I didn't see in theaters because it was when Gina's back was fucked up.
Did you watch it in 3D?
It was the first time I busted out the 3D glasses since I think 3D Avatar came out.
Okay.
And I have to say it's the first thing I've watched in 3D that was worth putting the glasses on.
All right.
Like it was...
You don't want shutter glasses.
Shutter glasses, yeah.
Maybe I'll bust the glasses out.
I did two things. I turned on some lights that were kind of off to the side, which helped the 3D a lot. That's a Ray Sonora tip.
Ideally, you want to try and recreate theater conditions as much as possible. Like turn the lights out as much as you can.
No, you don't want it all the way dark. All the way dark made it worse.
Oh.
What he suggests is to backlight, put a light behind the TV and splash it up on the wall behind the TV a little bit.
Okay.
I didn't do that because it's a little bit hard the way my TV is set up. But it was really, really lovely.
So dim the lights, but not all the way down.
Leave a light on that's preferably off to the side.
Now, why is it better if you shine light behind the TV on the wall?
The idea is to give you, to show the place that you have problems and have eye strain is when it looks like there's just when you can't see the frame of the TV, basically. When you don't have any perspective on what your eyes should be focusing on. That seems to be what causes the problems.
I think the fact that you have to jump through these hoops and fiddle around with the lighting in your room to get a decent picture shows you how not ready 3D is right now.
But all I'm saying is that this is the first thing I've watched in ages that made me glad I had a 3D TV.
Good. Well, I would like to stop kicking myself for buying that fucking thing, so maybe I'll watch this movie.
Dude, you shouldn't feel bad about buying
it's a great
3D TV. Great TV.
Yes, but we paid a lot of extra money for a feature that we don't use. It was a waste of money.
You paid a lot of money for a really, really good 2D TV that happens to have 3D.
I guess.
You paid a lot of money because you wanted 3 extra inches.
2 extra inches.
Wow. 2 extra inches.
Fair enough, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people do. Are we going to watch Avengers at midnight?
I'm in.
Well, so the word is it's awesome, right?
The premiere was last night, and I took every inch of my non-existent self-control, willpower to resist checking the forums for what the initial feedback was. But The word is it.
People are into it.
Whedon delivered.
I have every look. Joss Whedon, I think, is a fucking genius. I had every faith in it from the moment they hired him, and it sounds like it's the real thing.
That's a fantastic. That long trailer that they released yesterday, where they say, you know, the superhero and the demigod and all, it's really good. I'm excited about that movie.
Yeah, it looks great.
I think it's not every day that we get a superhero super team.
And I'm sure the execution will be great, but like just the very idea, like this is the superhero movie that we've wanted since we were kids, right? Like the ultimate team up of all these great heroes, like fighting
they have a Hulk
together. Oh yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah,
Hulk smash.
Why would we not watch that? So yeah, I'm in. I'm going to see Black Keys the next night too. So like I might have to sleep in that next day or something. I think that's it for what we've been testing. Let's do a couple of questions and, we'll get out of here.
Emails.
Well, but we do the other one.
Emails.
We don't do emails. We do
emails.
No.
Questions.
Boom. If you have a question, the email address is podcast@tested.com. Keep it under 45 seconds and make sure it sounds like you're not being drugged behind a car as you record the question. Use a microphone or something if you have one. It helps. Here is our first question.
Hi, Tested crew. Callum from Darfield, New Zealand here. First, a little bit of hometown trivia. Darfield is located near the epicenter of the 2010 Canterbury earthquake, a 7.1 magnitude earthquake that fortunately didn't kill anyone. Okay, now for my actual question. After recently having purchased a Nokia Lumia 800, I was curious what you guys think are some of the essential Windows Phone 7 apps. And finally, would you rather? If you could only consume one type of content for the rest of your life between the mediums of video games, books, and movies and TV shows, which would you choose? Okay, thanks, and always be testing.
So I think the essential apps are the same across platforms for most part. I mean, it's things like your music streaming service or your music player or whatever, Twitter client, Facebook client, Kindle or Nook if you're a Nook person. What else do you think, Norm?
I think you're right. I mean, there's no Pandora. There are obviously a lot of things. I think having Windows Phone doesn't mean that you – I mean, I've never used a Windows Phone where I wanted to get all the apps.
Okay. Which apps did you want to get?
Yelp, Spotify.
Yeah, I mean, it's stuff like that. It's the things that you use on a day-to-day basis. I like having a Wikipedia viewer on my phone just because it's easier than going to the web page. You open it up and search pops right up with a phone-friendly format. If you look at the stuff that's on the front page of my iPhone, it's the same stuff that I would want on the front page of my Windows.
I don't know the Windows Store enough to name specific apps. I bet if you ask Falcon in the forums, he will let you know
that is
the 20 best Windows phone apps.
Yeah, probably for sure. The other thing that I love that you don't necessarily like, the less obvious choices are things like subway or bus route timing apps. If you ride public transit, those are really good. Traffic notification, news, weather, stuff like that. It's all good.
Speaking of the Nokia.
Nokia.
I saw you on Techzilla this week talking about the Nokia 900.
I go on Techzilla occasionally.
I wasn't aware of that stuff.
Yeah.
But you were in. Seem to be a studio. Fan of the phone.
It's a nice phone. We said in the quick look, it's the best Windows phone I've used so far. It's a little bit big. I like the battery life on it. The screen is pretty gorgeous despite being really low resolution by kind of modern smartphone standards. I think it's a good phone.
And it sounds like it's selling quite well out of the gate.
I've
seen a lot of ads for it.
Aggressive pricing has helped them, I think.
Well they had a controversy.
There was a bug with data on the phone.
Oh.
And Nokia got in front of that real quick. It was a software bug. They fixed it and also offered people $100 rebate. If you suffer from the bug. So basically,
they're giving it to everybody whether you suffered from the bug or not.
So basically, a $99 phone is -$1.
Now free,
It's almost like they were so quick out of the gate to give everybody the $100. I think it's if you buy it before the 21st or something or 13th. I can't remember. It's almost weird. Like it was bizarre.
They are really pushing this phone. Yeah. And I think everyone who's bought it has been pretty happy with it.
Good.
Yeah, it's a good Windows phone. The only real outstanding question is what's going to happen with support in the future. So,
right.
I'm going to hit one more question.
Oh, did we answer the would you rather? What's the one medium that you would choose?
I would keep books.
What are the choices?
Books, video games, TV, or movies.
Yeah, and he didn't list music. Because not listening to music, I would choose movies because that incorporates music.
Hmm.
I guess even though it feels like the most moribund of all, I would keep TV. Because if he's not including internet, which would be the winner.
Yeah, internet.
I'm going to take TV because I need to – because I still want to be able to get my news and my entertainment, and that's the only place it's going to do that.
Well, but you'll keep the internet. The internet was not part of the equation.
Oh, but I thought you were saying like you had to survive on just one thing.
Video games, TV, movies, or books.
What is he saying?
And not have the other.
And not have any of the other three.
But I can still have the internet.
Still have the internet.
Oh,
but I assume
right.
you couldn't what? Watch TV on the internet if you chose movies.
Or you couldn't read books?
You couldn't read books on the internet.
Once again, I feel like this question is the victim of not enough clarity.
You got to really workshop these things before you send them in, guys. There was a great Reddit thread the other day that somebody twittered at me that is like dozens and dozens of would you rathers. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah.
You got to think them through, though, because if you leave logic holes in them or any kind of flaws, we will
holes,
find
tear them open.
We'll burrow into them and fucking nest there.
Look at all those hungry birds out there by my bird feeder. That damn squirrel.
Hey there, Will Normandary. Luke here from Hampstead, North Carolina. A little bit of hometown trivia. The town is supposedly called Hampstead because when George Washington was here during the Revolutionary War, he ordered fish but got ham instead, which is actually plausible because my neighborhood is built on a Revolutionary War post road. Now on to my question. The Wi-Fi reception in my room is terrible, and I'm looking for a way to improve it. Is there any kind of small, cheap repeater that I could buy to improve the Wi-Fi reception coming from our router upstairs? Thanks, and always be testing.
Yeah, we did a video about this last year or the year before. I can't even remember now.
2 years ago.
2 years ago. There's a couple of things you can do. There's good instructions online to make foil paper antennas, basically, that you can use to kind of
focus
aim the Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Those work better with B and G routers than N routers. The other thing you should do is change the orientation of the antennas. If you imagine the radio signal coming out of the antenna as a donut, the antenna goes through the center of the hole, and then the signal radiates out in the shape of a torus, basically, from the antenna. So
point it.
Yeah, so you don't want to point the tip of the antenna toward your room. You want to point the side of the antenna toward your room, and that will help.
Mm-hmm. But you can also buy a repeater.
Yeah, repeaters don't work very well, though, in my experience. You're much better off running a wire someplace and then plugging an access point, making an access point someplace there.
Yeah, that's what I did. I ran a wire and then had a splitter.
So that's the repeaters, because repeaters typically add a lot of latency and drop packets, they're not good solutions.
So far as the Hampstead thing is concerned, I would have imagined that like many towns and cities in the former colonial states, that it was just named after its English equivalent.
There's a Hampstead, England, right?
Of course there is.
Yeah. See, that Hampstead thing, that seems like bullshit to me.
Yeah, I mean, New York, New Hampshire, all these places are all based after named after the original English version.
What do you think about that Matt Groening story, the Springfield, Oregon thing?
I thought it was I thought the media got carried away with that and they turned it into a bigger story. So Matt Groening saying that the Simpsons live in Oregon. He didn't say that at all. He just said that it was named after the one that he grew up near.
Well, and the thing he always said in the past was that the joke was the most common name of the city in the country. It could be anywhere.
Yeah.
Yes.
Springfield, Ohio.
So yeah, the media twisted that into a weird thing that I don't think was ever intended.
Well, it's been a big kind of running gag that they never show exactly where Springfield is.
Well, no, they did.
Kentucky.
They showed it at like the intersection of four states that don't in fact even intersect the way that they showed. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Right. But I thought Kentucky was one of the states that didn't have a Springfield. I thought that was
the joke.
Well,
it's like these people who try to, create the maps of Springfield. Right,
I love
the
those
episodes, but they're never accurate because the writers don't care.
The Simpsons do not live in Oregon. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
So that'll do it for us this week. Thanks for everybody who wrote in or questioned in. And as always, Gary, Norm, thanks for coming by, coming down to sunny and foggy Pacifica. We'll be back next week with more. This is only a test. In the meantime, this outro is from Hogwasher.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
Tested.
My mouth and see how it tastes. It definitely burst my mouth. Mm. It's delicious.
That's new.
They're new every week, Norm. They are new every week.
That was from a video from this week.
Yes.
Oh, it's very fresh.
It is. It bursts in your mouth.
Spherized rum.
Explosion of flavor. If you want to find that, just Google search raw outro song file tested and it pops up and you can submit your own every week.
Love it.
People are doing it. We should probably do a how-to explaining how to do that. That may not be a terrible idea. What's on the fake outtake front this week, gentlemen?
Can you take that picture of the cheeseburger off the screen?
Yeah, is that distracting you?
Yeah, thank you.
It's a really good cheeseburger picture.
It's getting close to lunchtime, and I don't need to see that.
Did you replace my cheeseburger picture?
I replaced
picture,
all
you?
Your pictures.
Every week, man. I spend 20 or 30 minutes looking for an awesome picture.
Don't bother.
And then Norm just replaces
That's Norm's strength, right? So why not just let him do the pictures?
Well, I feel bad making him do the pictures.
He knows a good photograph when he sees it.
Don't bother.
Okay, well, hi, Chloe. I picked one with depth of field and everything. Chloe's about to go get a bath.
She's smelly. After you get a bath. I know. Do we want to talk about this? Do you want to speculate about iPhones?
No.
Okay.
I'm sick.
No, I don't want to speculate about Apple stuff.
That link that you posted, that was that like long fucking tract about how and why the next iPhone can have a bigger screen. Who fucking cares? It's all idle speculation. All that matters is what Apple ultimately, what the next company actually does. And people bloviate and go on and on and on about what they can or should do. I don't give a shit.
Bloviate? Really?
Yeah. Look it up.
I know what it means. I'm just saying that was a kind of interesting poll.
Was it?
Yeah. Mm. I mean, it's not a word that you hear in common conversation on a day-to-day basis.
I guess not. It seemed an appropriate
exactly right. I'm just saying. I'm impressed. Well done.
There's your word for the day, people who never heard the word bloviate before.
That might be the podcast title.
It's a good
word.
It's almost kind of onomatopoeic.
Yeah. Yeah,
because it's kind of like you sound like you're
a blowhard.
Yeah, yeah, basically. You just sound like you sound like what you are when you bloviate.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just full of hot air.
There's a psychology experiment that explains that, why certain words sound like
really
their shapes or the feeling.
Explain.
It's a linguistics thing. So like they did a test where they went to some other country and showed people pictures and gave them options like a circle, and would you call it this or that, this other word? And one word was a more round sounding word, or the other option was a sharp.
Did they show them pictures of the words, or did they read the words?
They said the word.
Circle sounds circly because it has two C's.
Well, I don't know if that's how it works.
No, I don't think that is
sharp,
how it works.
Sharp shapes are typically named, or people name them sharper sounding word names.
They have fricatives.
Yes. But that's a linguistics term.
Interesting. I played Journey this week.
I thought you wanted to talk about.
Oh,
that
we're
going to
talk
week.
About that next week because Norm hasn't played it yet.
Norm hasn't played it. He can't join in the fun.
I did finish Mass Effect. Finally,
yeah. Which, and you said you weren't bummed out by the ending.
I thought the ending was entirely appropriate and fitting for the series.
And of course, now they've announced that they are going to do a director's extended cut, whatever you want to call it,
it's
that
bullshit.
Will clarify the ending for people that were confused or unhappy or whatever.
I downloaded the new multiplayer pack and played. We played a little.
Yeah,
we played a little bit.
We saw a little bit of the new maps.
The new maps are okay. We'll get more.
We'll get more into it. I love Mass Effect multiplayer. It's really enjoyable.
Yeah, it's still kind of like I enjoy it, but I kind of feel guilty about it because it is real microtransaction-y and in a kind of gnarly way that I would normally be offended by. But best company in the world or worst company in the country. So
premium Spectre pack.
Yeah, premium Spectre pack. It's $3 instead of $2. Blow those $20 cards.
Also, speaking of Journey, I know we'll talk about it in more depth next week when everyone's played it. But I'm very, very glad to see the soundtrack doing so well, because the soundtrack is one of the most amazing things about.
Well, I've been listening to a lot of game soundtracks this week while I've been writing that, and the Fez soundtrack is out early on Spotify. I don't think it comes out for normal people until the 20th.
Okay,
but it was worth installing Spotify to listen to because it is really good.
Mm.
It's kind of ambient and electronic. You know,
I love that.
Yeah, it's good working music.
All right,
you don't want too many.
We're
lyrics.
All buying Fez. This Friday, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'll probably get Fez. I've heard good things.
It's on Xbox only, and Phil Fish, the developer of it, is very adamant about it being a console-only game. He doesn't want it to put on PC or iOS or anything.
And why is that?
Well, it wouldn't work on iOS, but...
I don't know why it wouldn't work on iOS.
You need physical
controls. Why doesn't he want it on PC?
He hates PC.
Well,
he's
thinks it's a
French Canadian.
Yes. Also, he thinks that it's he wants to be nostalgic of that console experience of sitting in the couch and holding a controller and figuring it out. All right.
That's his right. It's his game.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about Fez. I like the idea of a 3D, 2D platformer.
I remember we saw it at PAX. It looked cool. I was bummed I didn't get to go to PAX. I'm not going to get to go to either PAX this year. I'm really bummed out.
You should come in just for the last day on PAX West.
I don't think I can.
Or the first day then.
I know. As much as I want to, the other commitment that I have is the exact same dates. I could not have planned it worse. And I already said yes to this other thing.
Well, we'll just have to go to PAX Prime and, you know, find somebody to replace you.
Fucking pissed. I really wanted to go. I hate that when you don't go to a thing and everyone's Twitter is about how much fun they're having at the thing that you're not at.
Well, yeah, see, Boston. That's the thing is I had that happen last year with PAX East, and I thought, oh shit, I've got to go to PAX East next year.
Yeah.
And then we even were approved for a panel and everything.
Yeah.
And we bailed because, well, with all the transition stuff, it was all up in the air when we would have had to book travel.
I know, but we should have gone to this one since we can't all go to Prime.
I know, but Norm didn't want to go to Boston. He doesn't like the East
Coast. Don't put it on me.
Norm said, I don't want to go to Boston. Don't
waste time in Boston.
I have nothing against Boston. I have family in Boston.
He hates
Boston.
Why do
you want to go there then?
That's what he told me.
I totally wanted to go.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, did you book tickets?
No, I said, hey, do you want to go to PAX Prime? Nobody responded to the email, or PAX East. So anyway, yeah, I think I'm going to go to PAX Prime. I don't want to speak for Norm, but
I'm going to say, if there's some way that I can get there on the tail end, I would or will, but I don't think it's going to work out.
Yeah, well,
do the math.
When the schedule is finalized, see what you can do, and we'll...
I'm going to ask for a panel.
I would do a panel again. I enjoyed the panel last year. It was fun. People seem to get a kick out of it.
Why don't you see if you can get Adam and Jamie to join you? That would be huge.
Those dudes are like, I have now seen what their calendar looks like.
Yeah.
When the busiest day we've ever had, you or I have ever had,
yeah,
is like, you know, a slow Tuesday for one of those dudes.
Yeah.
Their time is booked from like 8 o'clock in the morning until 7 o'clock at night on most days.
The price of fame and success.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't envy that.
Just give me the $500 million.
Yeah. No, Norm's just buying lottery tickets. Anything else we want to talk to you? That squirrel, there's now, the birds have left my bird feeders. They came looking for food, and because of that, piggy squirrel ate all of the bird food. The birds are going hungry. I'm going to have to go out and refill the feeder. No, no.
Life's too short.
Squirrels. My vengeance will be done. Can we talk about Boo? Do we want to talk about Boo?
No, I have no interest in that stupid dog.
I have no interest in the people who try to troll the internet.
Okay. So that's good.
I just got told that I'm not going to say it.
What?
Nothing.
If I heard a squirrel, I'm off the list.
No, no, no.
Is Leah listening to this right now?
Uh-oh. Yes.
Oh, no.
I got to go see your former colleagues yesterday.
Oh, at Future?
Giant Bomb.
Oh.
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 Oh. You're like less interested when you find out it's those guys. Yeah, I went over to their new offices at CBS Interactive. I got to see Jeff and Ryan and Brad and Patrick and all those guys.
We haven't been invited over there yet.
But they told me that you're coming over there next week, maybe.
No, next week we're going to be gone. We were hoping to do a lantern run.
But they're expecting you at some point to go visit them.
We want to do a lantern run, but we're...
Yeah, that's what they said it was. Yeah,
but schedules have been challenging.
What is
so
a lantern
far.
Run exactly?
Lantern run, remember that insanely twisted Shadow Planet game that came out last year in Summer of Arcade? It's the guy that does the silhouette artwork, the kind of cool... I can't remember what's the dude's name. You should know this, Norm.
Nope. Ian Bogost?
I don't think that's it. But yeah, so they released this game last year, and basically it's like a Metroidvania type game where you explore this side scrolling 2D world and have to unlock different weapons. And by unlocking different weapons, you open new areas of the world and all that. The challenging part of it is that the multiplayer mode is a 4-player thing where you basically start on the left side of this map and you go right. And it's one of the harder achievements on Xbox Live. You're like getting all nine, getting to 9 levels of this. You have to really work together as a team, and it ends up being this really tense thing. And we attempted it multiple times, you know, in the old days. We wanted to give it another run to try the lantern run one more time. Maybe you know, keep.
Have you ever done it?
No, we haven't done it. That's the thing is, when we do it, we'll stop doing it. But yeah, it's kind of the lantern run was kind of the genesis of Breaking Brad. Because Breaking Brad is a single player version of the Lantern Run.
When they put in torturously difficult game challenges.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
So it is a very challenging, very difficult game challenge. We have all attempted it multiple times and failed. Usually it ends up with Ryan and Patrick yelling at me and Brad, and people seem to enjoy that. So I would enjoy that. We'll revisit.
All right, good.
But next week we're going to go to NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters show in Vegas, for a night.
Wow, what's going on there?
It's cameras and stuff like that. We're going to shoot a couple of videos, and we want to meet with some vendors about maybe some high-speed cameras and stuff like that.
All right.
And then the next stop from there is to the SCAA, the Specialty Coffee Association of America show in Portland, where we will be drinking a lot of coffee.
I'm jealous of that one. I would like to have gone to that.
Yeah, so if you're going to be at either of those shows, then look for us. At SCAA especially, I want to grab people and have them teach us how to do something awesome. Like, I want to get a whole bunch of little how-to videos of somebody saying, hi, my name's Gary Witta. Here's something awesome that I know how to do. Let me teach you how to do it, and then have them teach us how to do it. That's my hope for SCAA. So if you see us, grab us, and we'll shoot some video with you. And I guess that'll do it for us this week. What do you – cheeseburger for lunch, maybe?
I bought pizza.
You bought pizza?
I bought pizza yesterday because I knew I'd be hungry right after the podcast today.
Oh, that was smart.
and I don't want to make food.
Well, like takeout pizza or?
Takeout pizza.
Okay. Yeah. So you just leftover pizza?
Yes.
Okay.
Which is the best.
Or do you just microwave it or put it in the oven?
Oven.
Oven. Yeah, always oven. Yeah. Put it on a pizza stone, the oven gets nice and crisp on the bottom.
Yeah.
I like that. We had deep dish pizza for the first time. I hadn't had deep dish pizza in about 10 years last
week. I don't like it. I always feel like thin crust pizzas because like the bread is the least interesting part, but it's what fills you up the most. I like the toppings. So I want most on the top and like the bread to just be like the thinnest plate possible.
Well, see, what I had was what I typically attributed deep dish to was like the Pizza Hut fake deep dish, right? You know, the Supreme, right?
Uh-huh.
This was like a Chicago style where it's actually like a thin pie shell and then there's like a layer of sausage and a layer of cheese and then the sauce on the top.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
You see now Pizza Hut in the UK and maybe here as well, I don't know.
The hot dog
thing? Yeah, it's a hot dog baked into the crust around the outside.
Oh, no,
yeah.
No.
I'm shaking my head.
Is it one long hot dog? Or
as someone who likes corn dogs, you'd think you'd appreciate that. I love corn dogs.
Really?
You like corn dogs?
I'm okay.
You enjoyed those mini corn dogs that we had.
Those are good.
The cornbread we got from the barbecue place was awesome.
I didn't eat the cornbread
muffins. Yeah, you missed out. Those ribs last week, by the way. I had two barbecues after the podcast last week.
Mm.
I had American barbecue, and then we had Korean barbecue at like 10 o'clock that night after the Modernist Cuisine thing.
You know, I actually did a San Francisco thing for the first time in all the 16 years that I lived here. We went to Burma Superstar.
Real? I've never been there.
I've never been. You got to wait. We waited an hour and a half, and that's why I've never been there because it's legendary for like those kind of Portlandia wait times.
Yeah, not interested.
But man, it was good. Mm. It was good food.
What kind of food is it? Burmese?
Yes.
Okay.
Hence the name.
Makes sense. Okay. Good talk, guys. See you all next week. Goodbye, internet streaming audience. I'm killing the video feed now. We'll be back next Thursday with another podcast. By the way, that's it. The show is over.